And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to the Clarion Independence Media, Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, with Pal Gamil. I think he says it that way. Gamil. Is it Gamil? Gamil.
What the hell? How many decades?
I don't know. I just want to make sure, you know. I got like, in the second hour, we have Michael Belfiore. And, you know, when they have a name like that, is it Belfour?
Oh, yeah.
Belfiore.
Yeah,
absolutely. Belfiore. I mean, you know, it's a look French. Okay. So what we're going to do today is talk about why Freedom's Phoenix size down this morning.
We weren't going to bring that up.
You know, it's, I tell you, you know, it's always at the worst time. You know, it's, well, so 3 hours with the senior editor, what shall we talk about?
Yeah,
well,
that was interesting at 4 a.m. when I got up and turned that on and came back and go, what the heck?
That's not good. That's not good. You know, well, what's going on is we've made a lot of changes and so on. Right when we get done, we're ready. Okay, we're done. You ready? We're done. And pal, come on. We're done. And we're going, and the servers had to be updated, and Michael's in doing in 4 o'clock in the morning kind of whatever stuff. So we'll just muddle through. But the site is so useful for a lot of the stuff that we do. I mean, all the activism that, you know, I've done for 25 years and Pal's done and all this stuff. I mean, it's all embodied in are able to communicate that and what we've learned and what's done and our perspective and everything with the website, and we keep adding on more and more features and benefits to it that it's really become a powerful tool. And that's what I wanted to talk to today. You know, the thing that we could do is normally what I would do is be going, you know, to the video and we'd see, and there's Pal, the future brought to you by Free Enterprise. You know, these are the signs that we did at Spaceship One when it was launched. And the reason we're going to be doing that is in the second hour, Michael Belfiore, he's going to talk to us about the successful launch and landing of Falcon 9's first stage. Now, they landed on water, and then they let it fall over. Because, you know, hey, man, I don't need a big, giant 9-engine rocket coming landing in Miami. You know what I mean?
So yeah, just, what was tragic about that is that they actually had video from that, and the video apparently didn't quite make it. Didn't survive.
Yeah, you know, it's a storm out in the Atlantic, and you know, it still landed. It comes in, you get just enough video to show that it's hovering there, and then you kind of see it goes, it falls over. And that was the plan, but they didn't. It was a storm. It was hours before they could get to it, and the video was kind of, you know, but they're happy.
He's like, yeah, Elon, it worked.
Yeah, so they're like, you know, yeah, we did it, bite me, you know, we'll go ahead and do that a couple more times. We'll get closer to shore, you know, and then because they can get within a meter, you know. I mean, it's getting to the point to where this is like, and we landed. So I'm, they're being careful. You don't want to have headlines, rocket takes out, you know, small town of. So this is something that's coming. And we were warned of this before, like a month before, that they were going to actually do this by Michael. You know, Michael wrote the book Rocketeers, and he did Mad Scientist, you know, on DARPA, and they're behind the scenes, so we get to find out a lot about DARPA, robotics, all this kind of stuff. Now, the reason we, you know, our little claim to fame on all this, see, it's always been, you know, what Pal and I have been able to do, and I'll go ahead and just let some of these run. We'll do now. This is, Pal's a big, he's a master Uber gardener, too. What is that? What do you call that?
Permaculture.
Yeah, but you got some designation, shiny badge or something.
Well, I just recently completed last Friday my actual official shiny badge. I'm now a I've gone through the Master Gardener training program, and that was a 17-week course once a week for 3 hours, and took my final exam last week.
Did you pass?
Yes, I did.
And, well, I thought you had something else, too. You took some...
I have a permaculture design certificate. I also have my garden pool design certificate.
Oh, they give out something?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. And
I don't know whether I'm still, but at one point, Dennis McClung of gardenpool.org goes, "You realize you're the only garden pool designer in Arizona besides us." And I go, I'm like, "What are you talking about?" Because there's... you know, several other others. He goes, "Every time I graduate, you guys, you move out of the state and basically start setting up garden pools somewhere else." So,
well, what? Go ahead and describe what a garden pool is. Yeah.
Garden pool is where Dennis and Danielle McClung, a married couple, moved into a home in Mesa, Arizona, and they had a swimming pool in the backyard. You know, there's no water in it, but it basically they were informed, well, you've got to if you're to own your house, you're going to have to either repair the pool or fill it in because it was somewhat damaged. And so they ended up coming up with a third solution, which is to turn their pool into what amounts to a subterranean greenhouse that had the deep end filled with water. They raised tilapia fish in it and started an aquaponics program where they were growing their vegetables off the fish. They have a chicken coop above the pool where there's an open chicken wire mesh below it where the chickens live on, and they seem to do quite well in that habitat, and their poop basically falls down in the water. That feeds the algae that's in the water, then the algae feeds the fish, and you have a pretty cool ecosystem. I mean, it really is an amazing. It's the most amazing aquaponics setup I've ever seen, and it still is. I just sit there and marvel at how brilliant gardenpool.org is.
And it's an inspiration to a lot of people because a pool is a it's a big maintenance.
Yes, it is. You know better than anybody. You got a big pool out there.
It's
an aquaponics setup.
I mean, you know, that pool pisses me off. We're going to get more fish. But the
it's fun. It's fun, though.
The thing is we learned about aquaponics probably, at least 4 or 5 years ago. And it was Tony Marie. She was down in Ecuador. She saw this gazebo thing that had the hot tub had the fish, and then you had around the outside gardening and so on. So like a gazebo that you would have with a hot tub out in the backyard, but he turned it into an aquaponics thing. She thought that was way cool.
It is. You got fresh fish, and you got... vegetables that you know now grow fast. They grow incredibly fast.
And big. Bob Anderson, you should have seen this lettuce he brought over. It was dense. It was like a foot across. I thought it was like a bag full of lettuce.
I've seen that.
It was one thing. And I go,
oh my God.
That's like mutant stuff, man. You know, seriously? That's like Miracle-Gro commercial or something.
No, the aquaponics is great because the hydroponics, which is the original stuff, that uses chemicals, et cetera. You got to go down and buy all that stuff. And with the aquaponics, you're just using the fish waste, which is high in nitrogen, that feeds the plants. And then the plants basically detoxify the fish waste so that the water coming back out is clean, and you basically put it right back into the pond.
Well, you know, this is how a lot of small Asian villages, I guess, that they do this. They have wherever there's a fish pond, and then they kind of grow off of that and do it. So they kind of already did it anyway.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And... I did not know this. So when we heard about, I don't know how we came across Garden Pool, I happened to something. I was doing some we put up a story, whatever, and find out, hey, they're in Mesa, you know, which is, you know, not too far from where you live. So we had them at the Breakfast Club. We had them on the show for at least 2 or 3 hours. We had events where we would go out there with readers. They took us on tours. You spent time with them. I mean, you know, we go, I can do that. Yes, we can. And we did. And it's a very effective way of demonstrating just how much you can not die and take care of yourself. This knowledge and get better, higher quality juicing. That was the big thing because it saved so much money on juicing. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. There's a lot of things that Pal and I have done, and we'll share.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
New ruins. You know, Sierra, when she was producing, she would never come on air. I barely get a word out of her sometimes. But she did do a radio spot one time. She goes, "Roads? Where we're going, there aren't any. What's a ROAD?" or something like that. She's reading it, you know, roads, you know. ROADs, what's a ROAD, you know? So I thought it was funny. I think I have that somewhere. I should check my files and see if I got that. I've run that. Ian wouldn't
so
run
she
it.
Was playing the ditzy blonde.
Yeah.
She'd be good. I bet she'd have a good time doing that.
She is so, because she's so smart. Yes. And she's so, it just, she has absolutely no time for wasting her time with politics. It is. She is so far above that.
Well, it's understandable.
And so let's talk about you running for Congress. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. I guess it's a good time to bring that up. Well, let's go ahead and finish up on the aquaponic thing. What happened was, you know, I had something yesterday I was talking about, you know, I built up to it and back from the break and I'm going to tell you. And then I was listening to it yesterday because I want to, listen to Cody Wilson's interview that I did. And then after that, I, you know, did the last hour. He did the first 2 hours. And I go, oh, yeah, I didn't finish that story. Crap. You know, and my audience, when I was doing morning show in Scottsdale, that was the biggest complaint that I got.
Yeah, I was pissed about it, too.
It goes 7 to 9. And I'm building up to, you know, whatever, and people would be there at work at 9. They wanted to get the, you know, they're going to be late. I got to get in. I got whatever. And they're going to the last segment, and they're waiting for me to finish, and I didn't. And they're like, I was late, and you didn't. I get email. You know, they go, you some bitch, man. You say you're going to, you better finish the damn story. That's why I started using cards and writing it.
Goya used to do the same thing.
Well, it's because, you know, the world changes in
yes,
the break.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And a squirrel. So, you know, I'll finish the story. This is a story. I'm coming back, okay, from Pennsylvania a couple days ago. We were meeting Donna's grandmother had her 100th birthday. That was interesting. And she's still there, too. And she's sitting there talking, you know, Corsair and his family went, and Sierra Georgie went, and, you know, and us. And so Rhea didn't go because she's, like, almost ready to have a baby. And then and Forrest was working, whatever. But we got to go, and then we see the cousins and aunts and uncles. Now they're in New York, and then they're going down to Boston, and they're visiting everybody. So they're having a nice vacation. Well, what happened was when I fly, I always opt out. Because I don't want to do the scanner thing. They go, oh, no. We changed them. They're okay now. They won't, you know, give you cancer this time. And I go, well, that's what you said last time. I don't believe you guys. Plus, it's out of principle, bite me. You know, you don't need to, you know, be envious of my junk. So I'm going, so what I did is I always go, opt out. Well, when you first started saying opt out, what did they do? Did you ever fly when you...
Yeah, they go nuts. They're like, opt out. They start yelling, opt out. Right. Oh, we have an opt out.
Yeah, hey, over here, opt out. I mean, look at the opt out.
Maximum embarrassment on whatever. Of course, if there's a huge long line for the other side, you know...
You get out faster.
Yes, you do.
You know, this is one thing I learned. I'm going, oh, I'm definitely opting out now. So I always opt out. And then when you got this big long line, you're going, na-na-na-na-na-na. I wish to opt out. Boom, you get through probably twice as fast, you know. So that, but they try, they make you wait a little while, and they do their thing, and sometimes they real slow, and they're buttheads and whatever. But I'm like, opt out. So when I go in and I say, I'm going to be opting out. And sometimes I'll go up if there's a long line taking all your crap, especially when I go, I got, you know, 15 zillion computers, and I got, you know, six bands, and that's even better. Oh, you point out your stuff to us, and I go, that one, that one, that one, that one. I separate as much as I can. That one, that one, that one, that one, that one, that one, and that one, all the way up into the scanner to that one. And they go, so they got to bring another guy over to carry all my crap. And then when I get dressed, you know, I got this coming back from Manchester one time. Drew Phillips had gone through and he had his video camera. And he's over there videoing me going through this process and, you know, the guy doing everything. And when I get done, you know, the 5 minutes of me repacking everything, you know. And then he put that up and I saw it. I go, yep, that's what it's like every time, you know. So what happens is when I say opt out, they go like this. Opt out, got an opt out over here. And I'm like, seriously, you got to do, like, I cared, you know, I'm like, good, you know, you're advertising or somebody opting out. Okay, I'm good with that. You know, so then I go up now and I go, I'm opting out, you know, and I say it loud enough so everybody can hear, I'm opting out, like that, you know, and they're like, damn it. And I was going to say it, you know, so then they stopped doing that. I think that kind of, you know, I probably wasn't the only one, you know, so they kind of stopped yelling it now. They go, oh, I, you know, I go on the radio, we got to opt out, you know, whatever. So they come over and they do, I'm going to run my hand up in until I feel resistance and everything. And I was telling you yesterday, it was time before I was in Philadelphia at speaking at a thing. And this was just a few months ago. And coming back, it was a big, imposing 300-pound, 6'4", black guy. That man, he, nice guy, professional, did, but he was serious. I mean, my heels came off the ground, literally. He's like, and we're going up, bam, and we're a little field in action here, make sure we ain't gotten any grenades or anything, you know.
That
and
I'm might going, go off in my hand.
Right, and I'm like, wow, cigarette please. So, you know, I'm, you know, this guy took it serious. I'm like, okay, you know. Well, then this last time, but I always did this one thing. This is my silent protest. They have a mat with these two little yellow feet on it, right? Well, I would never stand on the yellow feet. I'd put one foot in between the yellow and the other one off the mat. I mean, just, you know, if they make you stand on the little yellow, you got to move the 6 inches, 8 inches over to be on the yellow feet. We got issues, okay? This is my test. I'm like, no. So going, you know, we were frustrated, Don and I, because we had to fill up the BAM with gas before you turn it in, or it's $9 a gallon, right, or right, some crap. Right. And we couldn't find, and you know, find. We had plenty of time, but we were just kind of frustrated anyway with that. So we get that done. We get in, and okay, we're fine. We're going through security. Opt out to get all my stuff to take me over there. And he's about, he's in his 20s, probably mid-late 20s. He's a nice enough guy. And he goes, oh, you stand on the, we're going to this, and I'm going to that, and everything. And I stand on it, and I kind of straddle. And he goes, no, I need to stand on the yellow feet and everything. And he looks at me also like, I got to stand on the, I go, no. He goes, what? And I go, no, that's my protest. I mean, seriously, I got to stand on the, I'm not standing on the yellow feet. You don't, you're refusing to stand on the yellow feet? Yes. So I'm like, I want the, I'm expecting, here it comes, man. I'm already frustrated. I'm wanting the beat down because I'm not going to stand. I'm going, yay, man. Ernie goes to jail. TSA, taken. He wouldn't stand on the yellow feet. So I'm looking forward to this one, right? I'm like, yeah, I think I'm willing to go down for this one, you know? So he looks at it, he goes, well, then let's get rid of it. And he kind of, you know, pressures me aside and he puts his foot on the mat and he kicks it across the room about 12 feet. It goes sliding, you know, and I was kind of surprised it
that
moved.
That is freaking awesome.
And then he said that, and then he goes through it like we didn't have it. I'm like, all right, right on, I win, you know. So we almost had a thing over whether I stand on these yellow feet or
taking
not.
Taking a photo with that guy. I said, okay, man.
That was awesome. You know, Donna, did you see that when he kicked it over? When you, yeah, so she saw that. Did you know what was going on? Yeah, she, you know, she kind of whatever. Because she's, you know, sometimes it's kind of cool because we opt out together. So she's over there getting, you know, felt up by a woman. And I'm over here getting felt up. And I'm more paying attention to her, you know. And every now and then, they'll pick a good-looking TSA. So I'm just like, you know, at least I got that going for me. It's all how you look at it. Before you go, you inhale.
Dead.
And then it's, I'm on vacation. Yeah, that's what I'm counting on. I'm on vacation. It's all good. Yeah, it's all about attitude. All right. We'll get into some serious reward stuff, whatever. I finished the story.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
I'll tell you, we want Hal to come on. We're going to talk about a lot of things and show you some new and improved broken sight and everything. But, you know, so we'll get it up. It's, you know, amazingly.
Could you rephrase that?
Yes. Amazingly, over. Well, yeah, good point. All right. Well, you know, they only see me waist up. They only see me waist up. The what we're going to do is, you know, that's one thing I look forward to. This is what happens. On Wednesday evening, Nick Barnett and James Babb and on another guy's show, Jeff something, I can't remember, Bennett or something like that. There's a show that they have that I think James and Nick regularly go on and they drink, you know, microbrewery kind of, you know, their favorite something and get wasted on air. You know, by it's like, you know, when do you start listening? So you get the contrast from the beginning, or you just listen to the last
to
half?
The or when the guys like who think they're really intelligent.
I know. It's like, you know, it's you're afraid, you know, what happens. You know, it gets
that's because it's recorded.
Right. Right.
You might see it the next day.
Right.
Oh, my
you know?
God.
So I'm going. So what happens is, anyway, this has been like weeks in the planning to do this schedule so that I could participate and, you know, bring your best brew. And I'm like, okay. Well, I tell you what my brew is. It is, you know, tea. Yeah, that's what it is. and this is what I got left of this. And I think this is equal to, you know, several beers here, you know. So we'll start off, you know, with this. And our friend Mr. Anderson, you know, has learned how to do distilling. And we're finding out, you know, that if you distill for your own, you know, private use, you can get up, Arizona's like 200 gallons or 5,000 gallons if you, you know, something. I mean, it's a lot. You know, now, of course, the feds don't like it and they play their game, but, you know, yeah, bite me. So what happens is we learn, now he disassembled it because he's worried the man's going to come get him, you know. But what happens is he learned how to do distilling. We went to the Prepper Fest a couple months ago, and they got big, giant, freaking, you know, 300-gallon things, man. And they're Bloom distilling.
Distilling.
They are actually making fuel stations, you know, because these flex fuel cars can run on, you know, moonshine.
Yes, they can.
I did not know this.
I did not know it either. You know, thank you for introducing me to Mr. Bloom.
This is, I could, you know, back, I add distilling, okay, and we get fuel. This is because cars ran on ethanol. It was Rockefeller and them said, you know what, and it needs to be petroleum. Why? Because we own congressmen and stuff. So what happened was we learned a lot of this. Well, we had already kind of, we even have in the magazine, you know, Donna put in there step by step, this is how you do stills. And I go, ew, that's good. So what we did is we started learning how to do this. Now, what Bob did is he took the pure ethanol and he put it in with wood chips. You buy them at the, you know, the brewery, you know, making home beer place or something. And they have a lot of this equipment. You know, Arizona is relatively a lot freer than a lot of other states. I mean, if you're in Massachusetts or something, or, you know, hell, even New Hampshire, it's all state-controlled liquor state thing. And so here we have a lot of relative freedoms.
To
you
a
know.
Point, there's literally, for wholesalers, there's only two licensed wholesalers in the state, and all the retailers have to buy through them. So, and of course, John McCain's wife is one of the owners of that.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
You want to know where his money came from. He married into it. But
and the other one, I think it was Cactus. I think Donna, when we first got married, she worked for them. You know, so that's how I knew about this, you know this distributor thing.
That is the one evil, corrupt thing about our liquor system that's in the state. Is
your consumers, you can buy it anywhere as long as they all get it from us.
Yeah, as long as we got two sources and that's it. And there is the new federal wine law that opened it up somewhat, but I have no idea why you can't do beer through the mail like you can some wines. And you sit there and go, of course, why? Because congressmen apparently like their wines, I guess.
Well, here in Arizona, it was because the Institute for Justice filed suit, and it went to whatever on up through the chain, and they won because it was to help local wineries here in Arizona be able to distribute their product over the internet.
That's true. People don't realize there's wineries in Arizona. And actually, they used to make, I think, better wine than they do now, unfortunately, but there's about 7 or 8 of them.
Well, the thing that it was important about that is that not only was it challenged and won, it was like won in Arizona. I mean, you know, it's in Arizona. See, a lot of people don't understand. The reason we have very, you know, compared to a lot of states, even though it's a conservative, you know, Mormon red, you know, state kind of thing, is that the libertarian activists had a big impact on changing what was important in the culture. You know, people are demanding. You can't be even a Democrat running for Congress without having a picture of you on the front page with a 50 caliber. I mean, you know, that's just it. And you don't get elected. You know, so it's just you know, a whole different mindset. You know, the liberalization of marijuana laws. There was a recent court decision, a Supreme Court thing, to where they, you know, you're allowed to have some metabolites of marijuana in your system and not be classified as DUI. You know, so Mark made a big deal out of that, and he's on the news and everything. And then there's, you know, so there's a lot. Mark Victor, criminal defense attorney, and so a lot of the things that have happened, and the reason we have a lot more, you know, our leash is a little bit longer in some states. We have a bigger cage, you know, is because of the culture that we've had a big impact on, and part of that is running for office. Pal Gamble's running for Congress for what?
District 9, which is...
No, I mean, which time? How many times?
This will be the sixth time.
Sixth time! You know, and how's your percentage? Are they going up?
Oh, yeah. I got almost 8% last time, I think. Almost
8%. Pull
maybe it was 7%. I don't know. Yeah, it's like... It doesn't matter that much to me, but...
Yeah, we don't even look. They get all freaked out, though. They got POW laws.
That's true. That's right. They passed the law, and they specifically named me and one other guy on the House floor.
Freaking POW.
For why they needed to
POW
pass
law. You know, because there's been a lot of... You see how there's Ernie laws. I mean, it's the same kind of thing, you know.
It's my first law.
You know, so POW got his first one, you know.
They'll probably shoot me instead next time.
Yeah, it's just... Well, but I tell you, this is what happened. Powell's running for Congress against Kyrsten Sinema, which is an avowed green, ran-ass socialist, communist.
She's definitely the leftmost left-wing politician in Arizona.
Probably in the freaking Congress. Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to be, I don't know who's more communist than her, but
openly,
they got to work at it.
Openly bisexual. She used to be lesbian, but now she's bisexual. So
I don't know how that happens. You get extra votes for that. I don't care about that.
No, I don't care about that either, but I'm just pointing out, in our climate, this is, you know, and I'm not...
Hell, that's what gave her a lot of her support.
She was running against, very interesting enough, she's running against a black man who is a mayor of Paradise Valley.
Conservative.
Yes, conservative.
I'm a conservative black man. I can beat the bisexual liberal woman.
Pretty interesting, you know, to see that.
It was a joke.
Of course it was.
Campaign. These guys. So Powell's running against him. He's a libertarian. They get up and they have their big, you know, debates and all this kind of stuff. And he gets up there. And I remember we were going to a fundraiser for Mark Victor, was running for U.S. Senate. I convinced him to do that. That was like, you know, it really went to his head really quick, you know. But he misread the climate big time. You know, he was like, well, you know, this conservative, he's not as bad as that. I go, they're all politicians. Don't say anything nice about any of these guys. You will regret it. They are scum. Well, this guy, my friend told me that. And then he finds out how scummy they are. I'm going, yeah, you know, and who's on tape? You know, don't even. So what happened was we were going to a fundraiser for Mark. And he did really good. He kicked their butt, and they did their best to try to ignore him, but, you know, he did really well. Well, what happened was I went to this fundraiser, and people are coming in. Well, damn, on the way in, I watched the PBS statewide televised debate of Pal Gamble. And he was like, they were so disappointed because you got up there and you're opening and you're closing, telling people you're still voting. Why are you voting? What is the freaking... We're going to pull up the tape. There was one, 4409 did a thing on you.
A great
It was awesome.
Great ad.
Awesome. This is freaking it right here. I'm going to pull that up. We're going to play that. This is why they passed the law. Because you got 7-8%. And they totally screwed up the Republican. Man, they were pissed.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied. I don't need you.
I got to break free. Okay, how do we do that? There's a lot of things that we can do. We should talk about Stephen Lindman has a Ukraine book, you know, coming out. Here's a guy, he's a retired guy, from, he's an engineer from Chicago. No, he worked for his family business doing something for, I can't remember. I keep getting these guys mixed up. But what it was is he did, he retired. He's a kind of a liberal, you know, Hugo Chavez is his hero, you know, but he's prolific writer. He probably does at least 1-3 columns a day. And so he does a lot of research, and he write. And when we were early on, he's been writing for Freedom's Phoenix since, like, early beginning almost.
Yes, almost from September, October, November, somewhere in there of 2005.
Really? That early? That's when we first started Beta.
He was driving me. He was the first one to drive me nuts. And, you know, you basically...
Yeah, because he had a Mac.
And I thank you for that. You basically are like, no, leave him alone. Let Steve Lemon do what he wants. And I from that, two things have happened. One, either I've gotten more tolerant of his writings, or he's gone more towards the libertarian to a point. You know, he's a progressive. He's a true progressive. He realized Obama was a snake before the guy took office. To my way of looking at it, a true progressive is somebody who realized that within at least 9 months of him taking office.
Yeah, he was Bush, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing was, is this is the philosophy that we had that we started off early on. We get a lot of criticism. Early on, we did. We don't much anymore, but... early on, they were like, "Well, how is this a libertarian site? That's not libertarian. You're not libertarian. You're saying you're libertarian, and you got all this unlibertarian, not very libertarian." And I'm going, "No. Let me tell you what's libertarian about Freedom's Phoenix is that we let the left, the right, everybody, as long as they're sincere and they truly believe whatever it is, they're not just trolls. You know, if they want to advocate for whatever they want to, knock yourself out. I don't care.
You were right."
And I go, "But we get to pick the graphic." we get our 1,000 words right there. And I go, that was the power of the site. You know, a lot of sites are starting to copy this, but early on in 05, you know, broadband wasn't that common. It was dial-up. And I remember Tiger, "Ernie, well, they can't do this. It's too long to load, and dial-ups won't be able." I go, "Man, I'm thinking like 10 years in the future, man. You know, this is, you're so last century." I go, "We're not talking about that. We're developing this site for everybody's got, you know, 100 megabyte per second up download kind of crap. I mean, let's get this thing set." Well, that gave us a lot of power to do a lot of things. And one of the things is we could definitely have our say. We get our influence. We get the libertarian perspective of somebody puts some communist, you know, fascist, neoconish, whatever the hell up there, then we can put 4 stories, you know, to counter that. So I go, "Don't worry about it. It'll balance. It'll be good." Well, that was one of the reasons why it was so popular with a lot of the, you know, our audience that, you know, make it popular with them, I guess. But is that it gives you that diversity. And that is really, I think, sets it apart. Is because if you go to, like, Politico or even Drudge or a lot of these others, they definitely got their own axe to grind, you know. And we do, too. But it's in, you know, the context of you get to have your say. Well, Stephen was very, progressive, you know. The government should do something. And I'm going, so he would have these great articles in the last paragraph. "Therefore, we need a new government department to fix this," whatever the hell it was. And I'm going, "You know, Stephen, if you just take that last paragraph out every time, we'd be good, you know."
That's the problem with progressives. They still believe that there's a way of getting a government that can do good and do their things. And you can't, because the people who get attracted to government are a bunch of thugs.
It's like crap and attracts flies. So, you know, so this is kind of what we have. And then there's, you know, the conservatives. I find that libertarians and freedom-oriented people, we find a lot more in common with, I think, the progressives than we do conservatives. And I used to think that was different. And I tell you why. I was over at Air America. I could see why. It's because they really believe they want to do what's right and what's best and helps the underdog and the poor man and the children and all this kind of stuff. They just kind of mess up in the head about how to do it. Conservatives are like, "Hey, we're here to help ourselves, and we're just going to do whatever, and kind of we rule, and we should." You know, that kind of attitude is, it's hard to combat that with any kind of logic or reason, because their logic and reason is what benefits them. You know,
well, they look
and not see freedom doing.
They look at it theoretically as economics issues, which is big on libertarians. But the problem I have with a lot of conservatives is they're into corporatism and fascism, and they don't recognize it or that, or at least acknowledge it. But they're into government helping them get rid of their competitors and give them tax breaks.
And then comes Larkin Rose and messes up their head.
Yeah, here's another thing we can bring up. Another great activist.
This is, I just met with Larkin in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. He's in Philadelphia. I was in State College, so we kind of, you know, drove the hour and a half each, and we met for breakfast. And we, you know, because we're planning to overthrow the universe. I mean, you know, kind of thing.
Okay, he's been kicked off YouTube, so, you know, that's a...
Larkin was?
Yeah, I think I don't know whether you're back or some of this stuff's at least been kicked off, which is, you know, what greater recognition for your work can you get?
You know, this is, we have, let's see, Adam Kokesh had his Facebook thing taken down. We had Stefan Molyneux had his YouTube or something, a bunch of his turned off, because just a weekend before he was in Amsterdam, you know, poo-pooing the central bankers, and they went, oh yeah, and guess who rules, you know, your YouTube channel? And then that went back up. And then we have, so you just wonder, who are the guys in there that actually flips the switch or the button?
Who's making the complaint that the people are jumping?
And who's listening?
Oh, let's unplug that.
Yeah, who's listening? Well, I mean, who's the guy that, you know, even, you know, of course they complain, but who's the guy that says, oh, this guy complained that, yeah, I got to take care of. You know, that boy needs to get, you know, his hand slapped, you know, whoever that was. But, and then, you know, Larkin stuff and Josie the Outlaw. Well, we're going, the big reason I'm going to Porkfest this year is I'm trying to get Richard, oh, yeah, did you call to schedule Richard Grove for the show next week? Yeah, go ahead and get him. I talked to him and from Tragedy and Hope and Brett Vinott. School Sucks podcast and Larkin, and so I think we're going to have us our own little private round table, maybe include whoever wants to kind of, you know, overthrow the planet, you know, for freedom kind of thing, and or just ignore them, you know, bad guys go away. But the so there's a lot of stuff coming up, and that's what, you know, Pal and I are gonna, you know, we're gonna spend some time certainly in the third hour, because in the second hour coming up we're gonna have Michael Belfore, and he's going to be talking about, you know, the SpaceX and private space travel and mad scientists, and we're going to have a lot of fun with that. But I, you know, on your congressional race, oh yeah, all right, damn it, we're going to do that. We'll do this in the third hour. You know, you build up. If you guys can't wait during the break. You know, you can go to. We'll play it in the break. We'll get it in the archive anyway, just for the hell of it. But we'll play it in the third hour. But this Pal Gamel. 4409. You do a search on that. 4409 Pal Gamel, and you'll see the video that he did on. I'll save it for the third hour. You guys got to all share, because this is awesome. He took this whole debate that went on for, I don't know, a half hour or an hour, whatever it was, and he summed it up in like 4 minutes. And he goes, this is the essence of the entire thing. And you were telling people what? What pissed everybody off?
Oh, well, I say, what the heck are you still voting for? What's the point of voting anymore? I mean, you got these two candidates sitting on either side of me. This is your choice.
Yeah, you lose either way. What's the difference?
So the only way is don't play. Only way to win.
Make sure your vote counts. Keep it.
Yeah, stay home. Do something more important.
You know, this is, I think that is something they're having to contend with. They're going to have to, you know, throw a bone to something, you know, to get people to, but they're just like, nah.
Well, they make it mandatory like they do in many countries like Australia.
Of course.
You know, you get the day off, but you got to go vote. If you don't go vote, it's a fine of, you know, incredible amounts of money or whatever.
Yeah, it's on your IRS form. It always makes me feel better, you know.
Right next to your Obamacare.
Check off here.
You don't know what's $1,200.
There's so much. Pal and I go for hours and hours now. I wish we had, you know, more time. We got the third hour. You know, Michael, if he stays over, he'll have to just, you know, interface with what we want to talk about. But, you know, the second hour, you know, you guys stay tuned, because I tell you, this is going to be very interesting. Pal and I, in June of 2004, we went to the first launch of a civilian in space. That's what, you know, these graphics that we'll show more of them when we come back with Michael. And it was all about our understanding of what was coming. And I would talk about for like a year on the radio building up to this. I was going, oh, we're going to space. The government's not invited. And Pal's the one that came up with the slogan, Spaceship One, Government Zero. And I knew they took, Burritan took it from us. I knew he took it to the press conference, but I never saw pictures of it until today. Donna found it on the internet, a picture of the Spaceship One team up there holding the sign at the press conference. And I'm going, yes, I was looking for that. We finally got, oh, and Michael remembers that too. He didn't know that was us until the first time we interviewed him. Oh, this is going to be interesting. Second hour, wait up. Hey, Michael, if you go to Freedom's Phoenix, they're doing server crap, and it gets better each passing minute here. But go to Freedom's Phoenix on the left side. You'll see the Next News Network logo. Just click on Start Broadcast, and the TV will come up.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't been able to get on. Oh, is it Freedom's Phoenix?
Yeah.
But that's the one that's down, right?
Well, it's kind of up. They're turning on more and more features as we're talking. So the front page should come up. Is the front page up now?
Let's see. Are you guys in Phoenix?
Yes.
Okay. All right, now it's up.
Okay, now on the left side, go down, you'll see has all the radio show stuff, and there's one that'll says Next News Network.
Yeah, I see that.
And Start Broadcast, and there you go.
Okay, great. I'll tweet that out. But Next News Network would work, too?
Yeah, go to Next News Network, and the live feed will have us.
Okay.
And for just internet radio, you know, you'll see the LRN.FM there. You click on that, and that'll be, they can listen live.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and then she's going to send you the archive and all that stuff.
Sure. Yeah, I just want to send out a tweet.
It's broadcasting, mm-hmm. So we're good.
Okay.
It's just our site. Long story. We did a bunch of stuff, and then we updated the server, and the servers are the changes of the blah, blah crap, you know. So we got a couple guys that are working on it now. Matter of fact, today, Pal Gamel that came in, he's the one that, you know, came up with Spaceship One Government Zero idea, and we, did the sign thing. He is in studio, and we're doing 3 hours today, and he's a senior editor.
Oh, awesome.
Let's talk about our site being down. Yay.
So, what's his name again?
Pal Gamel.
Okay. He's there now?
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, he's on the mic. Here, say hello, pal.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, man. Still thinking about your sign with that Spaceship One.
It was inspiring.
Government Zero.
We just found, we included it in the graphics we're going to roll with you, and we found, Donna found on the internet, the first one I've seen of when Rattan actually had that sign up at the press conference.
Yeah.
Were you in the press conference?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they had the sign up? They were holding it up?
That's right. Yeah, Mike held it up when he was standing on top of the spaceship, and they're towing him.
Yeah,
right
no,
up.
I knew that, but I didn't know it in the press conference, because that's what Rattan said when he grabbed it from me. He goes, I got to send the media a message. And I go, okay, you can do that. We have others. But the thing was is that as time goes on, you get to know more about Bert. He's a big patriot, America helping the defense of kind of, you know, flag guy, So as time goes on, you know, I was kind of surprised that he took that attitude, you know, I mean, maybe you can help me understand that a little bit. And then we'll start off with that. I'll do the intro of us and kind of whatever. And then you can tell us about it. Cause I did not know that it actually made pictures in the press conference. And I'm kind of surprised that only now we're finding them. You know, a decade later. I mean, you know, what up with that? So, you know, where did that come from, Donna? Do you know? Well, go do it again. Find it and see where, you know, what site that was on.
5 more weeks. It's the 10th anniversary.
10th anniversary.
June 14th.
Really?
I think it's, June 21st.
That was June, whatever.
I thought June 21st.
It was early. Yeah, I can't remember.
Think about
it. All right, here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Coming back. Okay. This is one thing I want to go ahead and introduce Michael Belfore, but first you need to write down his website. And it's Michael Belfort. Okay, let me spell that. MichaelBelfort.com. Belfiore. You know, Belfiore. I'm pretty sure. Y'all help me out. Michael Belfiore. BelFiore.com. Okay. Now, this is why this is important. He was there, you know, with Pal and I. Pal's in, and we were there. There was only us that had signs. The only other sign at the first launch of Civilian in the Space was a guy selling binoculars, okay? He had, like, a poster board. He'd go, hey, I got binoculars. And so we were, like, had all these signs there and so on. At the end, when they were parading Spaceship One space vehicle, they were doing it for the crowd of 13,000 people. They were shocked. They didn't know there were that many people out there. They go out and take off. They're like, what the heck just happened? So what happened was we ran over, grabbed that one sign, and we had like six different signs and sayings and stuff. And I go over there, and I held it up at the fence line. Burritan ran over, jumped out of his pickup, runs over there. They were pulling the spaceship, and he grabs it from me. He just grabs it, and he goes, I need to send a message to the media. Today, Donna found for the first on Wikipedia, it's called Spaceship One Flight 15B or something. You know, you Wikipedia Spaceship One. And there's a picture of Spaceship One, Government Zero, there at the press conference. This is the first time that I've ever seen that. I knew they took it to the press conference, but I didn't know that they displayed it. Well, Michael's going to tell us he was there. How come you never told me before that they displayed that sign, man?
Man, there's so much going on. I was too busy trying to get Mike Melville's autograph, frankly. You know, all the reporters there had their these really nice laminated press cards they handed out, and there's this one guy who just saw him staring at his press badge and just thinking about it, and then he just said, ah, screw it, you know, mentally, and he went up to Mike Melville, the pilot of that flight, and said, hey, would you sign this? And then there's this everyone just bum rushed the
big
stage
long
at that point.
Line. That is awesome.
All the reporters were like, well, he can do it, I can do it, you know, screw objectivity, man, I want my autograph.
You know, it was that kind of an event. I mean, you know, the thing is, though, is that what we were surprised at, that picture of Spaceship One Government Zero made it in a lot of media around the world, but yeah, not a single one here in the United States. And yeah, I have to ask, why?
That's been the puzzle from day one. I assumed, probably like everyone else, that this was going to be huge news all the time. And this is, you know, this is our new space program. It's privately operated. But that's not been the case. And no matter what kind of success has it occurred after that, and there's been a lot more going on since then, it's always gotten marginalized in the mainstream press. And, you know, it's the only thing I can think of is, you know, there's a lot of money at stake in the old way of doing stuff. These major, huge, bloated government contracts going to the usual suspects.
In everything. In every way, for everything, this entire system is just going to go bye-bye. I'm done. You know, I don't see how that... And you're on the leading edge of this. Let's talk about you a little bit. I mean, you're an author, journalist, and speaker, and you're in all the main publications on technology and such, New York Times, Popular Science, Popular Mechanics, Smithsonian, Air and Space, blah, 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 Financial Times, Foreign Policy. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on and on. Michael Belfort, he's the guy. He's the man. But I tell you what, it was years after you wrote the book Rocketeers that I even knew the book existed. I get it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, where's this guy been all my life? You were there from the media covering this kind of stuff, and you can't get a traffic ticket. So I'm just going, you know, this is, and you're inside. I mean, the guys talked to, yeah, we know Michael, okay? But, you know, the media out here, for some reason, why isn't it that every seven-year-old, every first, second grader isn't inspired as I was coming up? I was born in 61, so I was in first, second, third grade and stuff as we're landing on the moon and stuff. Imagine how inspiring that was to our generation, which is the guys that are doing their own private thing because bite me, government ain't going to do it. I go decades, I get the same space shuttle. What's up with that? You know, so this is, you know, there has to be a question in your mind. You had to have addressed this, you know, in your own mind of what the heck is going on, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I think partly it is the vested interest. I think another reason, though, is, I mean, if you look at Spaceship One, that did make headlines. That was on the front pages everywhere. And I think it was because there were people on it. And the successes that have come along since then have been unmanned for the most part. I mean, Spaceship Two has been in development ever since then, and it's only just about to fly passengers, hopefully this year. Richard Branson, who financed it based on that original Spaceship One design, says that he's going to fly this year with his family. So I think that's going to be major news. And SpaceX has been working in parallel development for orbital space flight. That was just suborbital. He's doing a whole other thing. It's a whole other level of difficulty, and they're working on their manned program right now. They're flying cargo to the space station, but that, you know, that's not as exciting as, hey, there's some people flying on that thing, and they're, you know, they're going to Mars, is essentially what he wants to do. So I think that's going to start getting the headlines again. I mean, I can only hope, right? I'm an optimist, though. I think it'll happen once people can identify with actual people riding on those things. And then when you start meeting people at parties and you know, in your social life who are flying on these things, then it'll get more attention.
Well, it will, but, you know, only because they can't prevent it. You know, I mean, new media is eclipsing. I mean, you look at the numbers of the talking heads on the cable, whatever the heck, and it's appalling. I mean, it's single digits, you know, millions. It's like, you know, yay, we got 3 million people watching all of us combined. You know, oh, they nuked somewhere, and okay, it's 10 million. And I'm going at a 300 and something million. Heck, you know, skateboarding dogs get more hits than that, you know?
Yeah.
So,
right.
I'm, you know, there is something else going on in the future. And that's why I like, you know, touching base with you, because, you know, you're talking about the future and technology, DARPA stuff, robots going, doing their thing and so on. I mean, let's talk about that before we hit the end of the break here. You know, what are the things that you cover and why?
I cover things that are going to change, that I think are going to change our world. You know, the way we live and work and play and do things on a daily basis, they're going to change the way we do those things in the next 5 to 20 years. That's the time frame I like to look at. Essentially, I'm looking at applied science fiction. A lot of these projects are inspired by science fiction. The people working on them read science fiction and watched science fiction, and they want to make these things happen. So that's the stuff I'm looking at. Like, you know, robots walking down the street, you know, doing stuff, you know, just like in Asimov's robot novels or iRobot. The
Here
movie
comes.
With Will Smith. That's coming. That's in development. And, you know, buying a ticket to the moon, like the ELO song from the 70s, you know, that's coming. In fact, there's two people who just announced, I was last week at an event where Space Adventures announced that they now have both of the private clients they need to mount a manned private lunar mission. And that's been in the works for a while. We've been waiting for two people who could each pay over $150 million each to go fly around the backside of the moon like Apollo 8. So now they're working on that. So these things are becoming part of the daily fabric of our lives in a way that, you know, was only imagined in science fiction. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning. And those are the stories that I'm chasing.
Well, I tell you, if I'm paying $150 million to go around the backside of the moon, the other person better be a beautiful woman. I just want
to... Yeah, or so at least you'd want to be cramped up with for a week, right?
Yeah, I'm going, yeah, you know, well, she better be good looking. Okay, the one thing is that the song 90 Minutes from New York to Paris, they're already talking about suborbital flights doing exactly that. You know, it's like, you know, an hour from New York to Tokyo. This is, it's coming. And Michael's keeping track for us. Yeah, pal, did you, you know, we're in the archive on here. I want to take some notes on some of the things that I want to make sure we get. And then, of course, pal is going to want to, you know, ask you some questions, too. So go ahead and give us some highlights, make sure that we don't forget and we include some stuff. Michael.
Yeah, okay. Highlights. I'm sorry, I was momentarily distracted by
it. Yeah, just highlights, you know, the stuff you want to make sure we get in the show. You know,
oh,
like
sure. I'll tell you about this thing I was at last week in New York. Pretty much every major commercial spaceflight company had a representative there giving updates.
So really?
I can give you a quick rundown. This story is supposed to run on MIT Technology Review that I wrote any second now. It might actually be up now.
Donna, go take a look at that. Okay, what is
technologyreview.com.
Technologyreview.com.
See if it's there. I haven't checked this morning.
And just do Michael Biafore, technologyreview.com, see if the story comes up.
Yeah, it's not up yet, but, you know, I'll bring up my draft and I can rattle off some of the updates. That's
okay, let's do that. Okay, updates on private space programs. You know, I do want to get an update on robots. And, you know, if you got something, just flip through that real quick. Because there's two things I wanted to mention. You see, it was reactor beams and deflector shields. On Freedom's Phoenix, in the last few days, we've had two stories up there. One, the guy's going, yeah, we got tractor beams and we got deflector shields.
Yeah. Well, we need a warp drive now.
Yeah. You know, that's we already got as far as you know. I mean, you know, the guys that probably developed, they're not sharing, you know what I mean? And that's one thing is that, you know, we pay enormous amounts for all this research and development into things like DARPA. And, you know, I got to wait 20 years, you know, until it's antiquated technology before I find it on my, you know, shelf. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, how much do you get of that? I mean, what's DARPA? How much are they keeping? Do you get any kind of inside information on that?
They told me they would let me see 50% of what they're doing. Everything else is top secret. So it's really half the iceberg.
Yeah, well, that I paid for that.
Yeah, I know, right? That's our stuff. Let's see it, right?
Yeah, you know, whose is it? I mean, top secret for who? I mean, even in the movies, the lexicon is this. They go like this. They'll say, Oh, you know, that's not in United States interest. That's in interest in the United States, our national interest, interest. And I'm going, I thought our interest was freedom. I thought that was your whole purpose was leave me aloneism, you know? Yeah. And so what are you doing? You're putting a gun to my head to fund all the stuff that you want to do to perpetuate you putting a gun to my head. I'm like, where's the freedom in that? You know, somebody explain this to me.
Well, DARPA, the way they explained it to me was, well, you know, our job is to, you know, prevent technological surprise. You know, we don't want another Sputnik moment, you know, where we get caught with our pants down. So it's not a surprise to our adversaries if we let it be public knowledge first.
What? What do you mean by that?
So in other words, they want to create their own Sputnik moments. They want to be able to just, you know, have something come out like stealth airplanes. That was one of the big ones.
I don't freaking care who does what. That's the one thing this next generation, they don't recognize the borders and boundaries. You know, somebody, and I think that's kind of what, you know, scared them before. You know, so many people were inspired by Gagarin going up or Sputnik or something. They're going, yay, humans did it. We win. And they go, no, there's no we. There's us and there's them, you know.
That's right. Yeah. No, I totally agree with you.
All right, here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud?
Senior editor, Hal Gammel. Yeah, we've been doing this for, man, it's getting, you know, in a couple of months, pal, is going to be the anniversary of what? What's in a, you know, like a month or two?
You're talking about July? June 21st, I believe, 2004 was when we went out to watch the first manned private spaceship leave the ground and successfully by 331 feet.
Just made it.
Made that space.
You know, this is, and that was a, Michael, when you were covering that, was that monumental in your mind? I mean, were you just going, it's another gizmo kind of whatever, and I'll get to write a story? Or, you know, tell us about the press pool. I mean, how excited were they?
Well, for me personally, it was the event. It was what I'd been waiting for. I felt like I'd been waiting for that my whole life, basically. Because I grew up after Apollo, thinking I missed all the excitement of landing on the moon or anything cool going on in space. I wasn't excited by the space shuttle and all that stuff. So, you know, I was writing science fiction stories, but the ship had kind of sailed on that. You know, you couldn't bang out a story for 5 cents a word and pay your rent on that like you could in the 40s, you know, in the 50s. My idols were writing in those times, and you just couldn't do that anymore. So I thought, well, all right, what can I do? I'll write, you know, software manuals and you know, website copy for tech startups. That's what I was doing. And then I heard that spaceship one had gone supersonic. It was like November of, '03? Yeah. And I thought, this is my ride. This is what I got to do. I forget making up stories. There's people out there building this stuff. I got to get on the ground. I got to get somebody to give me an assignment. I had never written a news story before. All I knew was I had to be there representing some news organization. I really didn't know what I was doing. I just gathered a list of 20 or 30 newspapers and magazines that I could think of, and I just started dialing, you know, just saying, hey, you know these guys are going to go to space, and they built their own spaceship. Do you have anyone covering this? If not, you need to.
And, pick me.
Yeah, so I got the New York Post. They agreed to let me write a little blurb for their travel section. And then I got an assignment from the local arts and entertainment weekly here in the Hudson Valley in New York. The editor said this is totally inappropriate for us, but it's just so damn cool. I got to give you the story. So that was my first feature story, and that's who I was with when I got there. And then it was like a space Woodstock. I mean, everyone was there. Anyone with any interest at all in space who could possibly get there was there.
Well, where were you at? I mean, we were out with the crowd with our stuff. Did you see us with our signs or anything?
Yeah, it was kind of segregated. Like, all the media were in one section. There was a fence in between us.
Yeah, you were, and, like, on the other side of the tarmac or something over there.
Yeah, and they had us in a press room where they would give us updates, and there was a Jumbotron and stuff like that.
Oh, you were where they were selling T-shirts and stuff.
I don't know. Yeah, actually... No, I thought the T-shirts were in the spectator area.
Well, it was separate from us. They had their spectator area. It was this little tent. They thought there was going to be a few people there, and they look out and they go, holy crap.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. It was amazing to talk to the pilots after, like saying they're coming around the corner. You know, they didn't see the crowd when they came out of the hangar, and then all of a sudden, there they were, just lining the fences like they were rock stars, which they were, and it was a huge like rock concert or something. And keep in mind, this is before dawn. You had to get there at like 4 in the morning.
Oh yeah, we were there like
there about 1, and at 4 in the morning Bruton Tan did his walk through out there,
and it was freaking windy as hell.
Yes, it was. I was wondering how they were going to launch.
I go, they're not going to go in this. This is a bust. And they go, nope. When the sun hits, the wind stops. And they got a big wind farm out there. I mean, enormous windmills everywhere. And I'm going, it's obviously, why'd they pick here for an airport? I mean, so then, like they said, the wind stopped when the sun came up, and then here we go. And I'm like, right on. You know, so this is very exciting for us. So I'm glad we got to share some history like that. But there's been updates. You know, you're saying you just went to all these private firms, gave some kind of a collective joint press conference or something. Tell us about that.
Yeah, last week in New York City, there were 13, they call them new space companies, you know, these private space companies, 13 of them at one event at the Explorers Club in New York City, and they only had 2 hours, which that was kind of, how are these people going to present in 2 hours? They each had 10 minutes, 11 of the companies had 10 minutes to explain what they do and then quickly give some kind of update and answer a couple questions. And Virgin Galactic was there, SpaceX, X-Corp, Masten Space Systems, Planetary Resources. I mean, just pretty, almost everybody. Bigelow Aerospace wasn't there, but...
Yeah, what is up with him? All of a sudden, the space station says, you don't need to have your own space station. You need to dock with us and be part of us, and now you're in with the crowd or something? What's going on there?
Yeah, well, he got a contract, or I think, is it a Space Act agreement, or small amount of money? It's not a lot to put basically a closet, install a closet on the space station.
And that's just to keep him distracted or something, or what?
He's looking for his ride. He just doesn't have a way to get people to his full-scale modules yet. Until he does, he can't launch them. He doesn't have a business.
So Elon Musk has been kind of leaning like him a long time or something, doesn't he?
Yeah, actually, his deal is with Boeing Aerospace. They have
your problem right there.
Yeah, for some reason he hitched a ride with them. It's Boeing's competitor to SpaceX's crew delivery system. And so I don't, they basically don't want to do any more than what NASA tells them to do. So they're really totally hitched to NASA, whatever NASA says they do or not.
Does he have a contract? I mean, is this like, I mean, can he like get out of it? Okay, and at the end of this 4.5-year bite me, I'm over with SpaceX and then we're partying?
Yeah, I don't think it's exclusive. I mean, I think the bigger problem is there's just nobody flying people yet. I mean, SpaceX, I believe, is the is going to be the one that gets there first. But they're still 2-3 years out.
Okay, now 2-3 years happens in like a nano moment. All of a sudden, my grandson that's 3 is 6, and all of a sudden now we're going to space.
I disagree with you. We're pissing the Russians off. We're wholly dependent on the Russians taking our astronauts up and down, and NASA has already been making noises that within a year their new Orion capsule is going to be transporting our astronauts up to the space. And I'm going, the only way that's going to happen is if they buy their capsule from Elon Musk and slap their logo on it.
Yeah, that's the problem. Even the Orion capsule is sucking down these huge amounts of money that, in my opinion, should be funding more of the private efforts. And it's so expensive that NASA's only going to be able to fly it like once every 4 years or something.
Oh, okay. Here's a good example. This is something. SpaceX, Elon Musk, they come out and they say, hey, what's this you're awarding a contract for all these other that we could do our own and kind of, and what the heck? This is military industrial, somebody got, green fees and hookers or something for signing when we could do it cheaper and what? There's a lawsuit that he filed, it's kind of, whatever it is, saying, no, you guys need to revisit this contract awarding thing because you're just wasting money. And I go, well, didn't you know that's what they do? Yeah, that's one thing that...
Yeah, talk about that, right? Whole thing.
Yeah, what you got to do, space...
Well, it's the Russian engines. That they buy their engines from Russia, and Elon Musk going, wait a minute, you just banned imports on all this stuff, so you can't... And I'm like, crazy. Oh, sweet.
It's crazy.
Look at this.
And how Elon, his demeanor is, well, golly, shuckin' gee willikers, you're morons, So I'm kind of this kind of stuttering, kind of, well, shuckin's golly. And he's a freaking genius. He already sees way past. He's playing the game. And he's just, beating them upside the head with their own crap. And I love it, And then they had their 100th supercharger station go up. The Solar City is all of a sudden, freaking going bonkers. And so this is it. I mean, the future is, I think Michael Befori's got something to write about for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's getting really interesting now.
When we come back, there's so much. I mean, there's no way. You can't stay longer.
No, I got another meeting. I got another call I got to get on right away after.
Oh, man. This is we got to schedule, I doubt we can go. When's the next major launch of something? What do you think's coming up we can schedule you for?
Well, SpaceX is supposed to launch a constellation of 6 Orbcomm satellites next month. I don't know what the date is or if they've announced it. But that's a whole other crazy thing that's going on now because it's cheap enough to launch now, and you can gang together with this big rocket they have, 6 missions at the same time. They can have low-flying satellites that make all kinds of applications possible.
Oh, well, hell, these nano satellites here, we just launched 400.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, that's right. That was one of the planetary resources was at this event.
Yeah. I marked this down. I want to do planetary resources because, you're talking about the asteroid stuff, right?
Yeah, and they've got some nano satellites they're working on now, so that's going to be their next launch.
Oh, see, that's one thing. The percentage of the schedule that SpaceX has, how many of the, what's the percentage that are not military or government?
Right now, it's mostly, I think it's about an even mix of commercial and NASA, maybe more commercial, but he wants to grab a lot more military ones. He wants to do Air Force launches. That's what this whole lawsuit.
Is it to make a point of they're just being wasteful tax-paying scumbags, taking our money? Or is it like, I can make a bunch of, that's going to get me to Mars.
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, I think... I think Elon is a patriot. He's an immigrant. He loves his country. He wants to serve. I really believe that. But he also, he wants to fund his Mars mission.
But who does he blame? I mean, does he blame, it's like the government, we're under occupation by a foreign entity of, blood dripping off their fangs, pointy horn tail people? Or is it, the people are, we're just too dumb or don't care? Or, I mean, he has to have this from South Africa kind of perspective on what the hell is going on. And he's smart enough to see it. So, I mean, it's amazing he gets away with as much as he does, to be honest.
Yeah, it is amazing. I just hope he keeps going. Fingers crossed he can just keep plowing through because he's got...
Oh! Did you watch the movie Tucker?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh? See?
Yep. It's right along there.
Yeah,
imagine Tucker trying to overturn another industry at the same time. That's what Elon's doing.
Yeah, no, I mean, are the parallels in that amazing or what?
Yeah, they really are.
And he's up against the exact same people, you know?
And he's gotten much farther than Tucker did.
Yeah. Here we go.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
I want to know the truth. I want to know what's happening. I want to be able to plan. I want to be able to, you know, have my children inspired. You know, I was inspired. You know, just be inspired. You know, and what do we get from government? They're going, you know, we don't want you inspired. You might want to do something without our permission or something, you know? And that's one thing. So many things. You know, Michael Belfore.com. Let me go ahead and spell that for you. I want to make sure you can go get it. Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Belfore, BELFIORE.com, okay? And go get all his goodies there. You know, there's coming out in MIT's Technology Review is going to be an update on a lot of the stuff that has been updated by the private space industry, had a joint press conference to where they're going, okay, here's a little 10-minute, you know, quickie on everybody. And what was I do want to get into planetary resources. Tell us about that and what they had to say.
Is an asteroid mining company. Their goal is to find resources in space in asteroids and near-Earth asteroids and eventually prospect them. It's going to be like a 100-year mission. I'm looking at a 100-year timeline. So right now they're just building they're like the size of a toaster oven, little satellites that can go up and just hunt for them, just search for them first, and they'll make money by pointing the cameras occasionally back down at Earth and selling imagery. This is another business that's growing pretty rapidly at this point with more affordable launches and lower flying satellites. But their mission, their goal is to build an infrastructure, industrial infrastructure in space that's financed by asteroid mining.
Well, you mean industry like Bigelow processing plant of the focused sun melting ore of whatever the heck?
And the whole thing, like, you know, solar power stations, orbiting habitats, fueling stations for spaceships on the way out to other places in the solar system, everything.
You know, a gas station, that would be, I'm vote gas station. Somebody's got a gas station, they went. And
yeah,
a diner.
You got so much propellant that has to go up with every mission because you have to lift it from Earth. Most of every rocket launch is propellant. And you're talking, you know, thousands of pounds of liquid oxygen and kerosene or whatever else they're using. You know, if you could manufacture that out in space, which you could if you found rocks with water in them, which a lot of them do, and you use solar power to split the water into hydrogen and oxygen. Well, that's the best kind of chemical rocket propellant you can make. So then you don't have to lift all that weight from Earth, and you have cheaper launches. That
are there other propulsion systems coming online? I mean, I know we got a little ion here and a solar sail there, and do we got some? You know, let's get that thorium reactor going on or something. I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, no, like ion and solar sails—they're good for interplanetary travel, not from getting off the planet. Right now, the best we have is hydrogen and oxygen. No one's going to allow anyone to do nukes, you know, and that would be the only thing you could do. It would be more effective that we could potentially, you know, have the technology to put together. No one's going to get approval to launch a nuclear reactor.
Well, how does a nuke give you propulsion? Is it just heat and water or some kind of propellant or what?
Exactly. Yeah, it's just a lot of energy in a small amount of space. So, yeah, you can. That's, you know, one idea. You could heat up steam and just have it blasting out at, you know, just incredible speed. And another scheme would call for dropping little tiny little atom bombs out the back of the system, and then the shock wave would push the thing up.
So it's kind of like a fusion reactor laser, you know, reactor boom.
Right? Yeah. Well, if you fusion, those are all fission.
I vote on that one.
But the fusion one, that would be even more effective. And that one, you know, everyone's trying to work on fusion for, you know, terrestrial power supplies, and no one's there yet. It's perpetually 20 years out. So,
you know, they say this is, I tell you, and you probably recognize this more than most, is that I would read science magazines and science fiction and everything, of course, in the 70s and 80s and such. And I started to see that it had about, you know, a 5 to 10 year turnaround. Then it went like 3 to 5. Now it's like 3 months. I mean, you know, they come up with it. Oh, isn't this great and wonderful technology? And I remember hybrid technology in the 80s. They had little gas turbine engines like a cruise missile that was the power source for electric motors that would, you know, power cars. And I'm going, turbines of speed. That was like Batmobile. I mean, how come we don't have this already? And I'm going, it's always some government thing. You know, that's one thing we talked last time. I asked that you watched the movie Tucker with Jeff Bridges. Mm-hmm. And what'd you think of that in comparison with Tesla and what Elon's doing?
It's really similar. It's, you know, it's somebody trying to do something radically different in automotive and getting lots of pushback. And that's what Elon Musk is doing now with Tesla Motors. He's gotten much farther than Tucker had, though. I mean, they're ramping up to, you know, what are they doing now? 500-600 cars a week out of their factory.
Yeah, I heard that number and I went, yeah. Are you freaking kidding me? A battery making is make them $1 gazillion.
And he's ramping up to 1,000 a week. But what's interesting is that they're trying to shut them down on a state-by-state basis by preventing Tesla from actually selling to consumers. That's one of the radical things they're doing. They don't have dealerships. You just buy right from the company, like you walk into an Apple store and buy a laptop.
Not allowed. Not allowed.
That's not the way it's done, right?
Not allowed.
Yeah. So, but he's making it. He's getting it going. He's really changed the perception of electric vehicles, and he's made it possible for other makers like, you know, Nissan with their...
When they're out drag racing Dodge Vipers in a freaking Model S sedan, I mean, what the hell else do you need to prove?
That's right. That's right. And that's the interesting thing. You know, so much of these new technologies is not so much about... I mean, it's partly about new technology, but it's also about shifting perception and reaching the market and convincing people that these things are viable, you know, as a business. And that's exciting, though, because it means it's really definitively leaving the lab and the science experiment phase into something we're actually going to interact with every day.
Well, you know, Elon's doing this, like the Tucker thing, like you made the comment off air, was he's doing it in like 2-3 industries. You got Solar City he's working with. You know, we have Tesla Motors, and we got SpaceX. I'm going to Mars. I mean, this is, what is he, Leonardo da Vinci of our time or something? I mean, it's like he's Iron Man. He's Tony Stark.
Well, he is. He's a very unusual guy. I mean, he's like a modern Thomas Edison or somebody like that. Just this incredible drive and great combination of, you know, business sense and technical sense and the ability to work with people and convince them that his ideas are valid and viable and all that.
Well, you know, that's one thing. He goes like this. He goes, you know, some of these things are the stupidest ideas. I can't believe they keep coming back, blah, 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 blah. I can prove whether I can or can't do it on a napkin. He goes, I don't understand what the and you've met him before. You've talked to him, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, you spent probably a total of what? You know, hour, two, three, four? I mean, you know, you got to know him a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He comes across as just, you know, he's a regular guy who just genuinely doesn't understand why we don't do things better. And he's really good at explaining why we can do them better. And that's one of his real strengths.
No, that's his danger to the system. We don't want people to know that we've been BSing them for decades.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, well, why do we... But this thing now going on with the Russians, they supposedly have all these sanctions against the Russian government, and yet the Air Force is buying these launchers, you know, these satellite launchers that use Russian engines from this company ULA, United Launch Alliance. It's, you know, a joint venture of Boeing and Lockheed Martin. And Elon's going, well, wait a second, we got a rocket here, everything's made in America. Why do we need to even import any of this, and especially from the Russians? And by the way, our systems are a quarter of the price.
So well, that's why. You know, Powell brought this up. You know, he noticed this thing about the Russian deal. He's going, yeah, there's something not right here. You know, I've seen some of the stories you've been, you know, selecting and such. You know, what was your impression of that, Powell? You think Elon's going to make out on this one?
I don't know. He's at least being open and jumping ahead of the curve rather than trying to let the government get the spin on things. But I honestly don't know whether he's going to win, prevail ultimately or not. But at least he can make them look bad if they're going to end up winning.
Make them look bad. Make them look bad. I like making them look bad. You know, is that... Yeah, he used that goal. You know, how does he come off, Michael, as I'm defending the taxpayer, or I'm defending logic and reason, or I'm, you know, I mean, I how does he, you know, portray the motivation for him doing it?
Oh, it's logic. Yeah, what makes sense. And also, it's just inherently a good idea because it's cool.
Co is a good idea.
Should you be?
Yeah, no, that's it. You know, that's the one thing that I'd like to talk to him. You know, there's so many things that, you know, when you would meet someone like that, you know, or even Branson or these people that have the capacity to, you know, just fulfill their own dream. And you go to Elon, the first question is, I'm going, what is your perception of humanity? What's your perception of government in general? What's your perception of, you know, the system and how well it's working, not working? I mean, what's your perception? Well, you know, it'll be, yeah, humanity marches on. We'll overcome this. We got to get this monkey off our back. Or, oh, my God, I can't believe it's this bad. Or it will. I mean, what do you think his answer would be?
I think he's an optimist. He thinks we will overcome. He's from South Africa. He grew up under apartheid. He's not black, but he didn't agree with that system. And that's one of the reasons he left before he could be conscripted into the military and forced to serve that system. So he has seen an apparently intractable political system completely turn over, you know.
But he left. I mean, where do you go from the U.S.?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we're seeing a similar kind of revolution going on here where people are speaking truth. I mean, it's one of the main, I think, features of this technological era we live in. We're under surveillance, but it works both ways. We can disseminate information as well, and people can actually see that other people agree with them. They don't have to be stuck in their little cube in some mega corporation thinking their own dark thoughts. They can connect with other people who have similar ideas and get together and do something about it.
You know, this is the one thing that I realized in all the activism and the media stuff that we do and everything, and I started to realize, you know, quite a while ago, and this was it. They don't try to convince you anymore. They're kind of past that. They're not able to, you know, like do enough BS to make you believe that they're doing good for you or something, as, you know, the cops pounding you on the head. So I'm going, so what are they doing? You know, well, they still have the election. Well, you need us. We want everybody to know why they need us. And what they need to do is they just confuse you enough to make you believe that all your friends and neighbors and everybody else is still drinking the Kool-Aid. Everybody else is still stupid. Everybody else is doing, yeah, I'm the only guy that really knows what's going on. Then, when the Levolution hit, you know, and the Ron Paul thing and the internet and all this kind of, all of a sudden, now everybody's going, you know, I think we're all on the same side. They suck, man. Holy crap. And then you have things like what Elon's doing. You're going, oh, so the attitude, in my opinion, and why we do Freedom's Phoenix the way we did, and we were preparing for the future. It's been, we're like 9 years. So it's been a while. We were planning, you know, 10, we're just about ready. Matter of fact, Powell was in today to announce a lot of the changes that we do. And the site goes down, you know. So it looks like it's getting back up now. But the point is that we were planning for the future that you're depicting. And I'm going, you know, I have a lot of optimism, but the bad guys will not go down without a fight. And for Elon, right in the middle of all this, and it probably was good timing along with this Russian, you know, thing that they don't want to play anymore. And where are we going to go? They need Elon. Without Elon, they're screwed.
Yeah. And NASA, too. And they don't have a vehicle. So it's really perfect timing for this.
Yeah. But that would be the question of what is the threat? Is there a threat? Are they, you know, like, you know, look, you're getting a little too uppity, and we're going, I mean, is there some threat to, you know, Tesla, you know, to SpaceX? I mean, you know, that's something, let's go ahead and talk about that, you know, here we go.
Satellite channel is free to listen to. It's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with a chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Thank you.
know, I tell you why. It's because, you know, it always comes around. And you go, yeah, you want to be free, but what do you do?
You want to be free. You come running back. I told you so many times before. You come running back.
To government! You know, oh, give it up! You know, this is, and unfortunately we have a lot of experience. And that's why Spaceship One Government Zero was such an important message. And I think even Bert Rattan, when he took it, he said, I got a message to send to the media. Then it's, you know, out in the press conference and all. But then later, the more I find out about Bert, he's a big patriot, man. He's like old America. And there was, we had Michael Melville. And who was the other pilot there, the dark-haired guy that flew?
Brian Binney.
Yeah, Brian. We talked to Brian, and he had an American flag jacket on, and he's just, you know, America. And a lot of these guys, they really see it as an American team that they're on, as opposed to humanity or truth or logic and justice and all that kind of stuff. I get the impression that the chink in that arm may be a little bit, you know, with Bert, but definitely Elon is more of a servant of logic and humanity than I think any one particular country. What's your impression, Michael?
Yeah, overall, I think so. It's interesting about Binney, Melville, and Musk. They were all immigrants. They're, you know, Elon Musk and Mike Melville were both from South Africa, and Brian Binney is Scottish. So they have a perspective on America that maybe some of us native-born folks don't have. You know, we take things for granted a little more. These guys have, you know, they deliberately came here and chose to stay here because they felt there were opportunities here they couldn't avail themselves of anywhere else.
Well, in the hangar, you know, after the thing, I don't know, were you in the hangar? You saw us out there holding our signs and banners and stuff?
Inside the Spaceship One hangar?
Yeah, after the launch.
So, no,
Well,
I
you were
invited
in the,
back.
Yeah,
then.
You were in the press thing. Well, we were invited either. We just crashed it. You know, we just walked in with our signs. Oh, yeah, we're with that guy. No, we're with that guy. Whatever.
Yeah,
well,
you had the sign, man. You had the seal of approval.
Yeah, no, we just walked in. You know, we had a bunch of other signs. Bert had already taken that other one. And we're delivering these to Bert, you know. And he got to keep those. All those signs, he has it. You see the pictures of. We left them with them.
I wonder where they are now.
I'm sure somebody's got something somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, well, what happened was, as we're talking to Benny, we're just going, he was like, oh, American, American, American. I said, you know, I just, FYI, you think they're just going to let you? Well, you don't want just anybody going up in space drive. Yes, I do. Yep, that's exactly what I want. I don't want to have a permission slip. You know, this is not, and even at the time, I was interviewing people about private space, even before that happened, you know, the people I was talking to. And they were of the mind that, you know, and any government representative, they were of the mind that if you are a U.S. citizen, it doesn't matter where you go on this planet. They control whether you can go to space or not. It's like they were the IRS or something. You know, your livestock and branded with us. And I'm going, wow, this attitude is what we have to go up against. And that's where I think Elon comes in, is that, you know, we got to break this attitude. And what are you going to do? You rule us on Mars. Now we got Russia talking about putting people a base on the moon. So, you know, I'm sure DARPA's out there. We're going to get surprised. And then, it was a Chinese. Somebody's talking about they're going to go to Mars. So what are we doing? We're looking to Tony Stark to save us? I mean, you know, seriously. So that's one thing that, you know, you were telling us before off air that, you're talking to the DARPA guys, and they go, we'll show you like half of what we got, and our goal is just not be surprised by a Sputnik or something. Repeat that.
Yeah. DARPA, that's the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. That's the government agency that got the internet going and a bunch of other projects.
Pentagon.
It's part of the Pentagon. And they, their mission is to both prevent and create technological surprise. So it all came out of Sputnik in 1957 when the Soviet Union launched the first satellite, and the Eisenhower administration freaked out, and they created DARPA, as it was called, ARPA then, to sort of do something about it. Okay, we don't want the next one to happen, and we got to get a leg up in space. So, you know, we want to prevent the next one from happening, and we want to, you know, keep up in the game, you know, in areas where we don't have the advantage. And that's been their mission for the last, you know, more than half a century.
Well, what's some of the new tech that's coming? This robot competition thing, there's some weird stuff going on there. Google buys up Boston Dynamics. That was the lead in a lot of the robotic technology with their mule thing. And I mean, it's getting, they got cheetahs, they got flying drones. I got, you know, it's getting to the point now, I really got to worry about a Terminator coming chasing my ass down.
Not quite yet. I mean, they're not that capable yet, but that's where they're going. I mean, they want machines that can do the work of people in environments that were created for people. In other words, something that can go into a factory and just push levers and
yeah, it sounds like a soldier to me.
You know, yeah. Well, that's, you know, of course that's you know, it's very easy to make that connection. Well, if, you know, if you can use human created tools, why not? You know, well, you can use anything, right?
Yeah, they're going to have, you know, drones, and they're going to have armed drones. They're going to have armed drones that walk, fly, track, go, get, do from the freaking, you know, mosquito size to, you know, Godzilla, I rule you. I mean, because they can.
Yeah, in fact, I'm going to an event that I'm going to be speaking at MIT next week about drones, and they're going to have some demos, you know, some people bringing in stuff in development, like this thing called RoboBees that was created at Harvard University, and things are the size of a, you know, a bee. And the idea is you just, you know, be the proverbial fly on the wall. I'd fly this thing in somewhere unnoticed, stick it on a wall, and, you know, eavesdrop or whatever. There's a bouncing robot. It's basically like a softball size thing you can just throw into a room, and it rolls in there and takes a look around before you have to go in. Things like that.
Oh, before it blows up. You know?
Yeah, well, that's sure. Why not put a little explosive on there? Make it.
Oh,
a hand grenade.
No, they have the robots in Iraq. We're going to go over there. We're going to sniff bombs. You know, and we're going to open it up and everything. And oh, by the way, we put a 50 caliber on it. I mean, you know, this guy. I'm sorry, pal. What were you going to ask?
Yeah, I was wondering if you've seen this YouTube that's been floating around the last day, supposedly shot by a U.S. Marine of a flying saucer taking out a Taliban camp, and it's not really a flying saucer, but it's triangle shaped. Aircraft that basically comes in, hovers, and then fires off. It actually looks real.
I haven't seen that.
I saw it. It's hitting the internet. You know what? One, it wouldn't surprise me. You know, and two, my thing is, if they can, they are.
Yeah, well, they're openly working on hovering vehicles like that.
Yeah,
that's in the public record that they're actually working on. So who knows what else they have behind the scenes too.
Well, what is this? Some before you go, I mean, give us some of the, you know, the big tech of kind of, ooh, man, this is a good little thing you need to know, Ernie. What?
Yeah. Well, space, of course, we've been talking about private space travel, missions to Mars, things like that are going to happen with private industry. Robotics is huge. There was a study released by Oxford University last year that said that 47% of all the jobs in the U.S. are at risk of robot takeover. In other words, you know, almost half the jobs can be done by a machine in the near future. So
I remember a science fiction story. It was called Fahrenheit 4187 or something. It was about a guy. His life was just maintaining the robot that went and worked for him, and he made all this money. But whenever he was in a hot environment, he went homicidal, killed everybody, so he had to move to another planet. But anyway, it's coming. You know, this has been awesome. We got to get updated more often and spend more time. I hate doing this hour with commercial breaks with you because there's so much cool stuff coming. You know, and what's your next thing that you're going to? What event are you going to be doing to cover?
So that's at MIT. Enterprise Forum in Cambridge. If you do a Google for MIT Enterprise Forum Cambridge and /drones, then you'll see that event. That's a public event. It's on Thursday.
Okay, Donna's putting that up on the archive here. That's cool. Drone. Yeah, what do you think is going on with the drone technology? Is it going to be opened up for commercial TV station, Fred with his own going doing his new media thing?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, FAA is mandated by Congress to incorporate drones into the national airspace by next year. So everyone's looking forward to that. And everyone who's building these things, you can buy these kits and build them for $200-$300 now.
Yeah, but you got to have a license. And now they want an internet license. And now they're going to want to have a Bitcoin license. And they're going to be there, you know, but I'm supporting all the systems that are like, you know, no. Oh, yo, okay. Do I hook you up or what? You know, you need to go check this out. MadeSafe.net, M-A-I-D, like a maid cleaning up. MAIDSafe.net. Go watch the video on that, and you'll see the future of how we're going to, you know, free ourselves of this kind of technology. Hey, man, if I ever steered you wrong, you need to go check it out. MichaelBelfiore.com. BelFiore.com. MichaelBelfiore.com. And he's writing on all this stuff that nobody else is reporting about. Why is this not front page freaking news? You know, certainly in the schools for every first, second, third grader. You know why? There you go. All yeah, right. We need more time. You know, we need to do... You know, what I'd like to do is one time we just schedule a couple of hours and we do it without commercial break. That would be a good... we can do the same thing. We put in a video in the audio archive. We'll promote it, put it in whatever hour of, and we'll get it pumped out there. But by having that available... And all this, and I'd pump the living crap out of it and put it in, you know, special categories with the push on the yada, yada, yada and the social networking thing. Because that, we could just make a list. Let's think about that, of all the things that we want to talk about. We'll go through your evolution as a writer and the things that you've been doing. It'd be a really good opportunity for you, I think.
Cool. Yeah, sounds good.
You know, that would be fun. And then, you know, like a pal can come in and we can all just chat. Because
yeah, I want to hear more about you, what you guys have been up to and why you ended up at Spaceship One.
Because I understood what it meant.
Yeah.
You know, it's I tell you, the big reason... All right, I'll give you the Evelyn Wood version real quick. In the spring of 98, we went to Washington, D.C. for my brother-in-law's wedding. My kids were like, I don't know, 9 to 13 or something. And we took them to the four kids, two boys, two girls, to the Air and Space Museum. Got to go do that. Yeah, go. And I went in and I said, all right, just go. You know, peace out. You guys just go. And whoever was with them, or so, I'll stay here at the front and meet me here. And we had kind of gone around and I kind of gave them, you know, what was where and the significance of different, you know, craft and so on. And I go, go. And I think Voyager was there too. So I go, go. I will be here at this time. You meet me at the front. Now, the big glass wall that's there, you have two doors or entrances that go in, and where nobody goes is up against that glass wall in between the two doors. Who the hell would go there? There's nothing there. That's where the Onasari X Prize podium plaque was, and it was about 2-3 feet high, and it was at an angle, and it said, you know, what the criteria was, you know, the weight of three guys going into space, and within 2 weeks, redo without, you know, changing more than 10% of the weight of the craft without fuel, or something like that. And I go, oh, it's the Lindbergh thing. You know, I'm going, okay, I see what's going on. This is good. This is going to happen, so all right, cool. So I logged that in the back of my head. I run my restaurant for like 5 years. We're doing that and everything. We sell that, and I get sponsored. They want me to go on radio, you know, because of the war and, you know, and the anti-war. We need to get Ernie on because I, you know, politics. So they go up and get, and we'll sponsor and go, and somebody be anti-war. I get up, and of course, I want to talk about all the stuff I want to talk about, which, of course, would be space. I'm in on Started Air, morning show here in the Valley, February of 2003. I think it was within a month or two is when that spring it was announced that Paul Allen and Burt Rutan got together and they were going to do Spaceship One. Mm-hmm. When that happened right there, one, because I've been following Burt Rutan stuff forever, I go, well, if he's doing it, we're done. I mean, there we go.
Right.
And then Paul Allen's got some money, so I'm going, we're double done.
Yeah.
So I go with my audience for a year. I'm saying, we're going to space. Government's not invited. This is probably, here we go. And I make a big deal out of it as, you know, we hear more about it. Then all of a sudden they announced that they were going to do this, you know, launch. And I go, oh. And so I go to my audience. So there was like a mini caravan of ours. And we went, we were going. At the time, there was a bunch of other political stuff going on and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But what happened was to demonstrate how this was going to be a big deal. And I couldn't believe that, like, the Libertarian Party and freedom-oriented organization, they didn't see this as a big, giant F you to the man, is that we're going to space without them. In fact, it was a condition that it wasn't with them, you know? So I go, this is an enormous opportunity for us to demonstrate, you know, exactly what we've been talking about and why we keep getting the space shuttle for decades. I mean, seriously. So what happened is free market, free enterprise. That's what all these signs were saying. So that Monday morning when it happened, that Saturday, we made the decision like Friday. You know, okay, we're going. And we had a bunch of signs made, you know, big billboards, you know, banners that we did. And then Pal came over, and we watched Band of Brothers, like, what was that, mini-series of you know, World War II thing, you know, all day. So we just threw that in, VCR or whatever, and we're watching that as we're making these signs. And we had a 4x8 sheet of coroplast. We cut in the four 2x4s, and two of them had front and back, so we had six slogans. And we sat there and made those, and he came, and we're making them up on the computer just to, you know, project them up on, you know, the wall, and we're tracing them out, and then we just hand-painted them. And we go, what can we come up with? So we came up with all these different ideas, and then Pal goes, oh, I got one. Spaceship One Government. I go, oh, hell yeah. That is so freaking it. So when we did that, we went, and then we had some friends of ours, and my sons went, and, you know, some other listeners on the radio show and so on, and we were the only ones with signs there, and we understood what it meant. It was a psyop. It was a demonstration, so all the media from around the world would come over and take pictures, they interviewed us, and they're, you know, and they're like, and we had the backdrop, all these thousands of people, and it was just awesome. So then when they landed, and we're getting ready to go, we're starting to pack up, and they finally started doing the parade of the ship, and that's when I grabbed that sign and ran over to the fence line to hold it up. I wanted to make sure, you know, those guys saw it. And then Bert jumped out of the back of the truck, ran over, and just grabbed it from me. And he goes, I got to send a message to the media. And he ripped it. I go, I got more, you know. So that's when we went and tried to find him. And we found out where the hangar was. And we just walked in holding these signs.
Right, right.
And then we're just standing in the hangar. You'll see pictures of me just standing there for an hour and a half. I just, you know, would switch out signs and flip them around and just get these messages in there. Because I wanted them to understand that we understood.
Right, and who got us kicked out? The guy that worked for the FAA complained to Bert's wife.
Oh yeah, son of a bitch. Okay, this is what happened. We're there.
I have to go. So maybe we should finish this. It would be great to hear that, though. We should tell that story on the air.
Oh, I do. You know, I have in the past. But anyway, so they ended that, you know, little party thing because one of the guys, I was critical because he went to the FAA asking for permission slip to go to space or a flight plan. Yeah. And they go, we don't have one. And he goes, can you give us a piece of paper saying we don't need a piece of paper? And they just created the regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, seriously? You know? So anyway. All right, I'll let you go. Hey, thanks a lot, Michael. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, we'll get you back soon, and we'll do a podcast long form, no commercial break, get it all in on Michael.
Cool. All right.
All right. Peace, brother.
Good to talk to you guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Good to meet you, pal.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
You know, as we're looking, that's us right there making that sign. And, you know, as time goes on, we start to see more and more of the photographs surfacing, you know, on the Spaceship One thing, you know, and it's 10 years later. I'm like, wow, man, there's something weird going on there, which is fine because it just makes it all bite me. And a lot of what we do at Freedom's Phoenix was due to this. It was due to the fact that it is uncovering the secrets.
And exposing the lies.
I'm just like, you know, I remember when we first started Freedom's Phoenix, we, you know, is there going to be a slogan we need to have, you know, as we were designing? I mean, heck, we were even doing the site before we even finished all the graphics and everything we were doing. And I'm going, I don't know, let me think. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. Because that was, I mean, it came to me like pretty quick. I mean, I was like, yeah, that's what I want. And then Pal wrote the About Us thing. and went over it. And I don't think we probably changed a comma, you know, from what you wrote originally. And it was like, you want to know why we're doing this, you know? And then you wrote that, and I go, yep, that's it. Good. Done. So Pal's been in this from the beginning, you know? And what? Tell people what your, you know, your career was, who you worked for, you freaking fascist, you know? Tell everybody.
I was a microbiologist, clinical virologist for the state government for several years, and then I went on to form and run their bioterrorism detection section for several more years.
Yeah, working with the FBI!
Then I went to work for a DARPA-funded defense subcontractor who worked for Northrop Grumman. And that's why I was laughing when he's talking about DARPA. So I can tell you about DARPA. you know, what are the money? We're talking about the money. I guarantee you, one of the purposes of DARPA is basically just to hand defense contractors huge amounts of money for which they ultimately don't really show anything for. It's just a friggin' cash cow that is called milking the taxpayers at the point of a gun.
This is, I mean, and that was what was interesting is that, one, you're like libertarian through this.
I was.
You could see what's going on.
I was. You know, L. Neil Smith talks about the disturbing number of scientists and academics who basically know better but take the money because it's so easy to take, and it was good money. Yes.
You know, so this is, it just kind of, you know, you were trying to keep your soul intact by behind the scenes doing whatever the heck you were doing. But, you know, this is, weren't you senior editor still at the time you were working for the DARPA thing at some point there? Or was that after that? When did you leave that prior contractor?
I think, in fact, it was after, because it was right after I left. I was looking for something to do, and that's kind of was the whole thing of we were Freedom's Phoenix, blah, blah, blah. You figured out how to get some money for it.
Started. I said, hey, you know, listen, we did a business plan that we presented to some people, and they went and they said, you know, this is a good... I tell you, it wasn't so much a... they were looking for a venture capital of whatever. They understood. You know, there are venture capitalists out there that were going to make all kinds of money and be in somebody and kind of... And they did like the Huffington Post kind of thing to where they sell it to Time Warner for $300-something million for something that we do a lot better. In fact, a lot of these sites kind of started to copy our formats.
I noticed that in the last few years. Which is fine.
I care. It doesn't matter. It's just like, it was like Matt Salmon running for governor when he was a congressman, and he had one of the first in 02, one of the first really, you know, cool web pages for politicians. You know, this is because in 04, after Howard Dean started getting some interest from people on the internet, then everybody was internet.
Started raising money.
Yeah, they were like, oh, hell no, man, we need to get on this internet thing. Well, back in 02, they kind of, you know, started, there were some people that had some money, they saw, they really did it what for. And libertarians, of course, were always there, you know, we were some of the first. But they put in the kitchen sink on, you know, Matt Salmon running for GOP, and now he's a congressman again. Well, what happened was, the content was crap. You go in there to find something. There's all these bells and whistles and kind of cool features of them, kind of, and you went in a circle trying to find his position on something. You never did. I mean, it was just, I'm going, seriously?
Perfect politician, baby.
Yeah, no. This was like a politician on freaking website. I mean, it was so obvious, and I'm going, this is what we're up against. So it didn't matter how whiz-bang it was. I just knew it was content that was really going to whip their butt. Well, what happened is when we started doing the site, it was so obvious what we were up against. And a lot of people that supported what we did so as a philosophical thing, as an investment in the future, as an investment in freedom. And then when the Levolution hit, they go, that was a good investment.
Yeah, the Levolution definitely was.
We chose wisely, you know. And but there's more of that was before. And there's more of that been since. I mean, like Spaceship One was a project that was like a year before we started Freedom's Phoenix. You know, you put in a little bit here, we know where to go. Like MadeSafe. That's why I wanted to get that in. I see that as a future, if not that, something like that. And Bitcoin, I'm like, there's still some chinks in the armor as far as I'm concerned. But for 2 hours, we had Cody Wilson on yesterday, Dark Wallet. He's like, no, this battle's got to be fought. And he goes, and we can win it. We just got to get early on. The point that he was making, yes, there are flaws. But if we can force their hand to where they have to make a decision now, because ultimately this is where they're going. They want to determine what is good Bitcoin transactions and what are bad Bitcoin transactions. And they're going to do that with some kind of licensing, some kind of approval of, some kind of, you know, listing with. I mean, there's going to be approved users and approved retailers and approved transaction interfacing bank people. It's going to be approved.
Yeah, but you disturbed me pretty big yesterday when you were basically talking about the fact that, can they change the source code? Can they get in there and change the thing and basically create more Bitcoins? And the answer is yes. And so it's
yeah, but it'd be really hard.
I understand what his point was on where the resistance would come from, and hopefully he's right about that. But the bottom line, ultimately, I think, is you need a system that has open source code where that cannot happen, at least not without it overtly being done deliberately. And I don't think you should be able to do it anyway. You have Linux, which is open source code. You have TrueCrypt, which is an encryption technology that's open source code. So it's certainly possible to not worry about the fact that the encryption things are open and you know, whatever. It's like, doesn't matter. It's like,
Did you watch the video or watch any or read any of the technical papers on the MadeSafe thing? Did you take a look
at that? I did see that a while ago, and I was impressed with their little presentation. But I don't really, I confess, I don't really remember.
Well, it's just mainly, you know, it's like Napster. I mean, it's a BitTor without the BitTor.
It is, yeah, it is distributed,
yeah,
which is excellent, because then you got a lot of security in that.
Well, you had the cloud mentality, and I'm going, okay, yeah, so you have bits and pieces on extra hard drive space or the whatever, and then it comes out to where, oh, yeah, and it's on Amazon's servers alongside the CIA and the next Yemen target.
Yeah, when you start seeing that, you're in trouble.
Along with my Amazon views.
Whenever there's a major corporation involved, you're already there.
Yeah, done. So I'm just going, and that's another thing we didn't even talk about with Michael. We had before, though, but Amazon, Jeff Bezos, has Blue Origin. Go look it up. Blue Origin. He's got his own space program.
Blue Origin, yeah, absolutely. He's put tons of money into it, and they're actually fairly far along. I'm not optimistic about their chances, simply because in the Blue Origin idea is that the entire ship will take off, go up without dumping any of the ship. That's a lot of mass to try to make orbit. Now they've kind of given up on it. I think now all they want to do is make the 100-kilometer mark so they can take people to space and bring them back.
Well, I think what it is, it allows for, and especially with the booster, it allows for delivering equipment to Gold Rush in Alaska. Here.
Yes, you're right about that.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com, constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Excuse me, is this where I get a license to start a new business?
I wouldn't be hasty. You have to get a license to go out of business, too, you know.
Oh, well, look, I've invented this little anti-gravity machine, see?
Oh, is that why you're walking 2 inches above the floor?
Oh, yes, it's very comfortable. It saves on shoe leather.
Yeah, well, you have to fill out these forms and report to the Human Services Department of Manpower Orientation and register with the Fair Employment Practice Commission, the Wage and Hour Division of the Employment Standards Administration, the State Sales and Income Tax Division, the Internal Revenue Service, and the Social Security Administration of the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. And, of course, OSHA.
OSHA? I thought that was a little town in Wisconsin.
You'll find out. Say, floating around like that could be dangerous. Have you checked with the Consumer Product Safety Commission?
Well, not yet.
Come to think of it, you actually are flying, aren't you? Look, you need to go over to the Federal Aviation Administration and the Transportation...
It's very hard to get anything done these days if you're in business, but free enterprise built this country. Think what could happen if we don't keep it free. A public service of this station and the Center for the Defense of Free Enterprise, Bellevue, Washington.
Besides, we just can't have people floating about unregulated, you know.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800. 1-866-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome to this special Vote 2012 edition of Arizona Horizon. I'm Ted Simons. Tonight's show is a debate. We'll hear from candidates running to represent Arizona's 9th Congressional District in the U.S. House of Representatives. Three candidates are in the race to represent CD9. They are Democrat Kyrsten Sinema, a former state legislator, Republican Vernon Parker, a current councilman and former mayor of Paradise Valley, and Libertarian Powell Gamel, a retired microbiologist who's making his fifth run for Congress. Each candidate will have the opportunity for a one-minute opening statement. We drew numbers to see who goes first, and that honor goes to Powell Gamel.
I differ from the other two candidates because I am not here to rule over you, but to advocate for our personal freedom. I live by a single principle, that it is wrong to initiate force or fraud on others, and I expect everyone else to live by that same standard. That is what the Founding Fathers were trying to give us, a system that maximizes personal liberty and profit and minimizes the cost to optimize our life by providing the freedom to keep and enjoy the fruits of our labor and not to let a bunch of thugs in fine suits come along and steal from those labors by rule and confiscation. So tonight is really about the only two choices you have, you choosing who rules over you or you choosing not to participate in that process. It is wrong to initiate force or fraud upon others.
Thank you very much. For the next opening statement, we now turn to Vernon Parker.
Thank you, Tim, and thank you all for tuning in.
Democrat, blah, 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 Al-Qaeda, blah, 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 blah. George Bush is a great man, blah, blah, blah. I love approved Fogel Radar's mayor. Oops, can you take him out? Okay, I'll lower taxes. Bullshit. I love the Patriot Act, blah, 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 blah. Working moms, education, blah, 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 blah. I love the troops on my car, I'm working with them in public, blah, 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 blah. I will give the Prime Minister of Israel a blowjob before she would, blah, 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 blah. I wear two flag clans because I'm so patriotic, blah, blah, blah. Faith is important to me, blah, blah, blah. God bless the troops. Blah, 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 blah. Iran nukes, blah, blah, blah. Bomb Iran, blah, blah, blah. I would bomb them before she would, because I'm more patriotic, blah, blah, blah. Thank you.
And our final opening statement is from Kyrsten Sinema.
Well, good evening. And Ted, thanks so much for having us here this evening.
Abortion, blah, blah, blah. Republican teen women, blah, blah, blah. Al-Qaeda, blah, blah, blah. Great job, blah, blah, blah. Working moms, blah, blah, blah. Energy independence, blah, blah, blah. I will sell out, have sex with anyone to go to Congress, blah, blah, blah. Republicans, blah, blah, blah. Healthcare for all. Education, blah, blah, blah. I had more to do with the troops, and we'll do another, blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. I already gave the Prime Minister of Israel a blue job, so he's too late. Blah, blah, blah. Nukes. Blah, Iran. Blah, blah, blah. Sanctions. Blah, blah, blah. I'm a bomb him before he would. Blah, blah, blah. I wear a pin on my snatch because I'm more patriotic. Blah, 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 blah. Thank you very much.
Final closing statement is from Powell Gamel.
Another 2 years and yet another opportunity to either vote for a whole bunch of offices or candidates, or one candidate is obviously going to win and therefore your vote doesn't count, or where an R and a D are both unacceptable, where once again you get to choose between the lesser of two evils. Choosing evil is still evil. The only alternative is to choose not to participate in what is a voluntary process. Don't vote. You have better things to do than reaffirm the process where a bunch of thugs get anointed to divvy up your stolen labor in a 60-40 split. The Washington Party does not need your choice because either candidate is acceptable to them. What they need is your participation and your consent in the anointing. Deny them both by finding better things to do this election.
Revolution. 4409.
4409! You know, that was that awesome or what? You know, 4409 did. And usually in the past campaigns, this is your fifth run. And the other ones, you were always, the suit and tie and bit. And this time, why did you choose to, like, screw them, man?
Because this was literally the only debate, and they didn't. The news media at a time when there were literally no incumbents, and this is a brand new district, had zero interest in anything on. And I'm like, I got this quote debate, 22 minutes of whatever, and I'm going, you know what? Just bag this crap. I'm going in and having whatever say. They were stupid enough to tell me I got 1 minute opening statement, 1 minute closing. It's like, all right, good. I'm good.
Yeah, no, we talked about that. I was like, you know, give him the Powell Gamel, man. Do it.
So it's like, yeah, and thank you, 4409. I mean, he sent me, he goes, is this okay? I got Mike going, oh, are you kidding? This is a political ad, man.
Oh, heck. His video got saw more than the damn debate, you know? And you know that, guys. Well, what happened is the state of Arizona, they are so threatened by the libertarian participation in the elections that they passed legislation that would, like, it made it impossible for libertarians to even get on the ballot. Yeah, they didn't even realize what they did. It was like, oh, we're gonna, you go, look, you're requiring us to get more signatures than there are libertarians.
Yeah, yeah, it was like, went from 40, I think I had 41 signatures of what I needed, or actually votes in the primary to get on the ballot for the general election, and instead, I needed 4,200 signatures after they've changed the election.
Heck, aren't you that many libertarians in your district?
I was laughing, going, huh?
No, we were like, you know, bring it on. I went to the meeting, you know, I don't get involved in politics, man. I just, ew. But I came from, I don't know where I was coming from, but Donna took me straight from Sky Harbor to a meeting down the legislators, a restaurant down by the Capitol building, and they had all the head Democrats and some press there and everybody, and, you know, what's my opinion? You know, what are we going to do? Well, Barry became the, like, chairman or spokesperson or something for the referendum they did on this law. The Democrats spent $500,000 so that they could get it on the ballot so Powell gets to run again. Okay? They're going, we got you covered, man. Don't worry about it. We need Powell. And because they believe that the libertarians is what gave, you know, the Democrats. And I'm like, you know, what gives the Democrats the offices is that you're a freaking fascist. I mean, all you got to do is, you know, like you'll sprinkle a little freedom on something, say the right, not be such scumbags. But they can't. They just can't.
It's a great district. There's actually a 2% Republican voter advantage in it over Democrat. And yet they managed to lose by, you know, the point spread that I covered. And that's the reason why they were ticked off.
Well, you got like 7.8 something percent. That's scary crap out of them.
They think, yes, it's a huge amount. And they're, yeah, hopefully it does. I mean, that's about the only reason for running is to hope that at least they'll give some mouth to the libertarian ideas the next time around, figuring, okay, we got to appease the libertarians.
They always do.
And it's like, yeah, fine, yeah. Exactly. They won't follow through with whatever they promise.
Well, but it doesn't matter. See, my thing is, it's a culture thing. You know, I'm going, you know, we do, because I've been running since 1990. I mean, you know, every election, sorry, every 2 years since 1990, except 10. Since 10, 12, I didn't run. But, you know, I'd help with whatever. But, you know, my thing was, is I could see that 2 years later, the same people I was running against would get up and they would repeat what we said. Now, of course, if you ask them a question about it, you know what the hell they were talking about. You know, they just saw from the previous election cycle how the crowds reacted. They go, ooh, this freedom stuff is like, you know, fear's not really working that well anymore, you know.
It's not like we actually have to vote that way.
Right. But I say, I want it. Well, you know, it wouldn't be prudent at this juncture to give you some freedom now because there might be somebody out there with some freedom. They do some bad freedom. And I'm just, you know, so that's why, you know, I have freedom's the answer, what's the question kind of deal. Well, you're running this time. You know, again, who are the candidates, you know?
Kristen Sinema will run again. I think she'll be unopposed, which somewhat surprises me. Like I said, she's probably the leftmost Democrat in the state. And she's not a real party favorite, but there's the former football player from ASU, whose name escapes me, and some lady. You know, once again, it's two Republicans. I don't really care. I'll find out in the primary who I face.
You'll say, hello.
And if I have anybody out there who wants to run as a Libertarian in the primary, run against me, man.
Be fun. Maybe I'll get some coverage.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Must be a political commercial. Well, there's another politician yakking.
Equal time. I want equal time.
Equal time. Okay. Well, let's take a break and listen to the other candidate. That sounds the same to me. You know, this is, I mean, seriously. You know, if this isn't exactly what we, you know, blah, 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 blah. Wait. There's some more. You had something else to say. That sounds the same to me. You know, the thing is, it is so blah, 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 blah. Well, we have fun with this. Okay, I tell you, we're going to do the Billy Jackson thing. All right, here we go. We're going to take, the right side of the right foot, put up against the right side of your head, nothing you can do about it. Okay, this is what we're going to do. I am of the opinion that it's all psyop. You know, it's all, opinion. And that was one thing that I thought was interesting. Somebody had a is Alan Corwin. Yeah, we got to talk about Alan, too. Alan Corwin, he's the one that did the big behind Gun Save Lives billboards. And they had on the bus stops, and it says, Gun Save Lives, train me, AZ.com. What it was is that the gun rights community was heavily supported by a lot of the NRA trainers and so on. They made a lot of money on the mandate that you had to get a concealed weapons permit in order to have a concealed weapon. So they're like, oh, see, they got this little special interest thing. We like freedom as long as it is permitted by the government. You got to pay us to get that freedom, that kind of thing. So we would always make fun of that. We're going, see, you're creating your own special interest, and you got to, ew. So then it became, we made it political, a lot of political capital was in there about, just making it unrestricted. I mean, it was just, you're just becoming a special interest. So finally, they just unrestricted concealed carry. Well, as a counter to help with that, Alan had the good idea. He says, and he writes a lot of, gun law books and so on. He goes, we'll just have Gun Save Lives, big red heart, and get training. It was kind of a collective thing where they pooled their money and they all paid for these billboards. And it would be, we'll go ahead and have all these people that are getting guns need training. So we'll have a much larger pool and we'll make more money, which I think they did.
Yeah, it's a good idea, too.
It was a great idea. So they put it up on the bus stations. Now, the buses are kind of, it's the city of Phoenix kind of oriented, whatever. But the sales is done by a private company, that CBS Outdoor or something like that, I think is one of them, that they get the ads, they put it up, it's all good. They did the contract, put it up. City of Phoenix says, no, guns don't save lives unless it's a cop killing somebody or something. I mean, I don't know what the hell they're.
I know, but they pulled all those signs down within 24 hours.
So they filed suit, and that's been going on for years. So this lawsuit's going. They just got an appellate decision to where they go, and the appeals court said, "Yeah, his First Amendment rights violate. You got to put sign up." Okay. Now this applies to the same thing about what was being done with fully informed jury banners going on the bus stops and everything by James Babb. We've been going back and forth with them and how we're wording it to get it in. So this case is definitely going to have a big AU on that. So they don't like this, okay? It's a psyop. Now, of course, he got a lot more, media and coverage from, the lawsuit and how stupid they are. But we did the same thing on, signs that said no guns in the park when the actual law said no discharge of firearms in the park. We made a big deal out of that. We get a lot of press. We show them what liars they are. It's because our governments, we are under occupation. They, them, those, or they are taking their orders from God knows what. They don't represent us in any way. Now, in the city of Tempe, which is ASU, it's a smaller area, which also has overlapping over it, the entire city of Tempe is in the congressional district that Powell is running for. We also have a Campaign for Liberty, Ron Paul delegate, young guy, Marine, dreadlocking, kind of, hip young guy running for Tempe City Council that just got endorsed by the Tempe Chief of Police. What the hell happened there? Well, I think it's because Matt, one, Marine, two, his dad was a police officer in Tempe, I think. So there was some kind of family connection there. So I'm going, okay. So Matt Papke, the primary's in August. Then you have the runoff or whatever goes in November 4th. I don't trust the system. I mean, I don't trust it. So if we're going to do something, we want to have the maximum impact, a little psyop, of whatever we're going to do between now and then. Now, I know better. I can't coordinate through any campaign and be First Amendment. I can do what the hell I want. So like I coordinate with anybody anyway. I do what I want. Now, let me tell you what I want to do. I'd love to have, kind of signs. I'm thinking, what should I do? And I'm going, it'd probably be economical to do these little signs, just a little coroplast. We got, a bunch of the little stakes and stuff. You can put them in, the little holders and so on that we have from previous campaigns and such. And I just get a bunch of signs done that you put at the traffic lights. There's little ones you just have everywhere. And what would I put up? And it would be a QR code you'd have on there, too, to contribute to Freedom's Phoenix or my Cassatius coin in the safe, or it's a big account. They don't know who it is, and all of a sudden it just keeps getting a bunch of money, and then I go spend it, and I'm like, ha! With Dark Wallet, and they don't know who it is, and you know, prove it. So anyway, so we go ahead, we put up little sayings. This is what we want to do. You know, little sayings. What's little sayings? Government doesn't work. I want my money back with an A in the back, a little anarchist A or something. Or you have, you know, the Larkin Rose had a shirt. I don't know if I sent it, I text it to you or not. Larkin Rose has this shirt. I got to put it up. Donna, take this off my phone. Let's see if we can get it in the last segment. Here. Go ahead and go in my graphics and you'll see it's Larkin Rose wearing this shirt. When I saw him, it was the no sign, you know, like a red circle with a slash through it. And it had like this, and it was like an A, you know, the slash is kind of like an anarchist A. And it was 2-foot-long wooden rulers. No rulers. Well, the anarchist, see? Huh? That was cool. So, Don, I took a picture of it. So you start putting those on every stop sign, you know. You put those little signs everywhere. You do it, and the little QR code to keep funding us doing that. Government doesn't work. I want my money back. No rulers sign, you know, government equals death or something. I mean, you know, all kinds of little sayings, and we just permeate the election cycle with this. Now, the reason I have run a lot of times in the past is because as a candidate, they can't take the signs down. It's a candidate. Of course, they do. But, I mean, you know, you can put up whatever you want. I'm like still voting with a, you know, V for Vendetta thing. That's, you know, kind of the stuff that we do. Endorsed by FreedomCX.com. Well, that's your thing, yeah. But you spelled it right. I mean, you know, I don't care. So the thing is that, you know, what if I could get you guys all to put, you know, a QR code on your sign as a Bitcoin thing that goes to you guys? You know, how would they track that? You know, what would you put it in on your in-kind contribution if somebody kissed my butt? I mean, how does that work?
Well, for me, unless they get over $5,000, I don't have to give them squat.
Yeah, that they know of.
That's right. $5,000 that they know.
You know, they always said, when I ran for Congress 3 times and U.S. Senate once. And so 4 federal races, and I still get these, you know, these FEC reports that I don't even open. I just throw them in the trash, you know. And they go, well, if you spend over time, I'm going, yeah, prove it. I mean, you know, I seriously, I don't care.
Yeah, they don't even bother sending me the stuff anymore because I just ignore it.
Pull the microphone.
I'm sorry. They just ignore that. I get the same envelopes. But, you know, this whole thing is about using the tools of the state against the state. That's the sole purpose for a libertarian running for any office. It should be. And you know, it's anything else, if you think you're going to win, is almost any election. There's been a few exceptions. But you have no chance of winning. But you do occasionally have a chance of getting a message across.
That is the win.
I mean, you're right. That is the win.
That's my whole point, is that I guarantee I win. I win before I even started. I don't do anything unless I know I won before I started. It's just that my goals are different. Well, you're never gonna what? You know, have the government computer tell me that I got more votes than whatever?
I get to be a ruler?
Yeah. I'm going to be a wooden ruler. You can smack the back of my hand with your ruler.
I'm going to be thinking about that for the rest. Every time I hear ruler anymore, I'm
going to... Oh, that's a good one. You know, don't get smacked on the back of your hand with a nun's ruler.
Finally, I'm 12 inches.
Finally, fold in half. So what happens is also when we're doing the campaigning, you know, you really get to piss off the reporters, because reporters, they're just government lapdogs, and we're going to make you, hey man, just spell it right. So what happened since 08, Barry Hess went for governor, myself, I was running for secretary of state, I was 06. And they come up, and we want to do the interview like they're doing us a favor, and we go, well, we don't talk to you guys anymore.
True.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760 Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Father?
Come in.
A rebellion has begun.
Under whom?
A commoner named William Wallace.
He will embrace this rebellion, support it from our lands in the north. I will gain English favor by condemning it and ordering it opposed from our lands in the south. Sit down. Stay a while.
Yeah, let's talk about it. You know, and this is what's going on. You know, you will embrace this rebellion. You know, it's got the left, the right, you know, my lands in the north and your lands in the south, and we'll kind of, we'll benefit in the end, whatever.
Two wings of the same vulture.
Yeah, the same freaking bird of prey. I mean, you know, or vulture, I mean, you know, after they kill us.
Either way.
You know, this is, this graphic, here's the one of Larkin, you know, that no, he was telling me the story. This is a Marine that came up with this, you know, some guy he interviewed, and he goes, this is awesome. I'm going, you know, get that boy into the marketplace. I definitely want to be, you know, have, and that's one thing, Donna and I have been talking, we're just so busy with so much stuff, and she's working on the magazine now, she's going to release Monday. And it's 36 months, 3 years we've done that. And I think we're going to divert our energy towards the newspaper. We're going to go ahead and turn it into the, we've had it all set up for the new, we've been doing the formatting since like November. I mean, we've been working on the different stories that we want to include. But there's things like, you know, so much in defending Archimedes project, so many things, it's time to get, it's all been a timing thing, getting the site done and ready, and it looks like it's back up, yay. But the, our whole thing was, it was to be ready for the next wave of the activism, because I knew what was going to happen. They're going to start shutting down YouTubes and Facebooks. It's already happened. Stephen Molyneux, Adam Kokesh, you know, always, Next News Network's always had, you know, problems. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on and on.
Larkin Rose.
Larkin. I mean,
and,
you know.
And Josie the Outlaw.
It's, I mean, of course. You know, this is, I'm like, oh, man, it's always this kind of, you know, what did you think was going to happen? That's why we did the Funding Center. James Babb with the GoFundMe canceling the campaign on the fully informed jury thing. I mean, there's so much of this stuff that I'm going, all right, well, while they're doing all that, I'm quietly getting the infrastructure ready back here. And I think we're about done, you know, of all the things that I wanted to do. Because a big thing has always been getting the shopping cart thing set up right. And so it looks like we got that taken care of. You know, Tiger's been, you know, head down plow on a lot of stuff. You know, Michael Kilski has been, you know, he just did updates on the servers, and we're having, getting ready for, because he had to, you know, that's what, you know, broke the site, is updating server stuff. But so over the past almost 10 years it's been, we've been down, and we've been under lots of attacks and stuff too, and we keep getting more and more robust as they do that. We've been down, I don't know, total of what?
Not very often, actually. Maybe we get attacked once a year.
And then we learn something.
Yeah, we learn how to try to...
And we find out who it is!
But yes.
Yeah. You know, because Kilski's an uber geek, and they don't know we got uber geeks. And they go in there, it's like, okay, out of Europe as a subcontractor of the Mossad... It was when we did Haria Phoenix, when we did the Arabic thing. Oh, hell no. They didn't like that one bit during Arab Spring. And I'm going, oh, I think, you know, if you're taking flak, you're over the target, you know. So we published exactly what we saw in the server logs of who did what and how. And their answer was, oh, well, we were doing you a favor by showing your vulnerabilities. You don't want us to do that? I'm like, seriously? Signed Olga. You can't make this stuff up. So, you know, I'm going, okay. So what? It was WebSense. I think that's what the name of the company was. And so I'm going, all right. We are, I think, ready to really, you know, hit it where it hurts them. And it's a culture thing. But does that mean that we could take advantage of Powell Run for Congress? Hell yeah. You know, so what's going to be your thing this time? I'm here and you're still voting? I mean, what are you doing?
You know, that's a good question. I honestly don't know. I certainly know don't bother voting is a key issue for me. But And of course, that means I win because, you know, I count all those people that didn't vote
as part of
the votes.
So. And as that increases, you know, I go, yep, we're winning some more.
Yeah. And we just talked about that. Sooner or later, they're going to make it mandatory. I'm sorry, you have to vote. Otherwise, we're going to tax you. Fine you. Whatever.
I didn't do another democracy.
We'll demand that you get the day off of work, paid. You know,
If they do that, I mean, I can just see the suits. I'm, you know, seriously, my expression is not participating. That is my vote. You're saying that doesn't count. Obviously, it's pissing you off. So I guess it counts for something, you know.
Well, you did. Do you have a permit to exercise your non-voting option? Did you apply for your permit?
Right. You know, I mean,
your exemption, your religious exemption, or whatever it happens to be.
You suck exemption. You know, this is. I see this attitude, it's changing, and they will deny, those. I mean, that won't leave me alone. It doesn't have to be a government or a corporation. There's just people that advocate for that. They won't leave me alone. We're going to go vote and put this guy in to make you or prevent you from something, pursuing my happiness when it has absolutely no effect on them.
You know, you have to vote. It's mandated in Australia, and I remember that they used to charge around $25 U.S. value. If you didn't vote, that was the fine. And they had to jack it like fivefold up because people were starting to say, you know what? Here's the 25, you know, it's fine. Here it is. You know, it's like, I'd rather just pay you the $25 and vote. Screw you.
Oh, we did this on the census. Okay. This is what we found out. To participate in the census, it goes up, and then we just go, there are X amount of humans living here. Oh, you need to fill out, and if you don't fill out all this other stuff, we don't get the free money from the government. We kind of need you to whatever. And I'm going, you're assuming that that's my goal. I mean, yeah, but if you do that, then I work for this other company, it gets paid. So, you know, it's just, so I just kind of had to ooh on it. Well, when they did the census this last time, we're going out to get some signatures, some petition or something, and Ed Vallejo was there and had his video camera on the table, and we see her, and I go, I think that's a census person. All right, turn on your camera. And we got it all on camera. She comes up, and we had been doing the shows. If you inaccurately fill out your census form, it's a $500 fine, okay? But if you refuse to fill it out, it's a $100 fine. So when she come up, and I just go, are you the person I give my check to? And she goes, what? Well, the fine, if I don't fill it out, I got to pay somebody $100. Is that you? You know, you got an envelope? I mean, you know, you write the check? I mean, how do we do this? Well, is there? And she just went through it, just kept pressing. Well, what about you, sir? Well, you had somebody. And he kept coming back, and Sierra's like, hey, man, I'm not talking. My dad kicked my ass. I said anything. So they finally came, and a supervisor goes like this. If you don't fill out our forms, we're going to put you on the list of non-form filler outer people. And I go, trust me, whatever list you got, I'm at the top of it already anyway, so we're back. You know? So that was their threat. You're going to be on the list. And I'm going, okay, wherever that list is, I'm sure I'm already on it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure I'm gotten on it because of you.
Yeah. Yeah, and senior editor pal is on the list, you know. So this is, that'll be interesting. I mean, you're going to list occupation as senior editor?
No, I don't list, whatever. I think I put retired when they ask what you're. I usually don't even tell them much of anything anymore.
Yeah, like, I don't. Well, that's one thing, you know, they call you and they want, and we go. I remember Barry says, you know, remember when you used to never would print the real story and now you can't get it?
Yeah, actually, you know, in that bit you showed of me that was 44.9's commercial, they talk about, they give a quick bio, and they never asked me for a bio, or if they did, I basically didn't. I don't think I gave it to them, so they must have looked it up online, where they basically said he's a retired microbiologist, which is fine. It's, you know, it's true.
Yeah, no, he's Mr. DNA, you know? So this, you know, Powell's got skills, man. He's a scientist, you know, working for subcontractor at DARPA and the Arizona Department of Health with the bioterrorism, you know, lab with the FBI, kind of, which is also after 9/11. I remember you telling us all these contracts and all the equipment that they want you to buy just to spend the money, and it's in the hallway. You don't even have a room to put it in.
Yeah, the head of the lab was not too pleased with that.
What, you bringing that up?
No, they had tons of equipment. He's like, where are we supposed to put this? I go, hey. Yeah,
talk to the government, man.
I go, okay, you want me to build a new lab for you, huh? Is that what you're asking?
just ridiculous, you know. And so I think the ridiculousness of government is starting to become pretty obvious to everyone. It's indefensible. And the youth, the young, you know, they're kind of default that way. And so it's just, they're looking for the alternative and the option of just none. You know, you just, that's the alternative. No rulers, you know. And it's just, that is where we're going. And it's a PSYOP thing. So we're looking at now, we're just now, hopefully after today, the server update, that we are ready to do the next wave of our activism using the political process to, you know, kind of inject something here in Arizona. Now, we're going to create templates that in InDesign that you can do your own paper with a lot of stuff that we have. Because a big hurdle for a lot of this stuff is just, you know, having it all ready for you. And you type a couple of articles, place it in, take it to a printer and print out papers, you know, around the country. So we're going to set that up. Watch what we do. It's going to be fun.